Hey there, everybody. It's Joel Radio with Joel. That's me, your host.
Yeah, I'm Corey.
And that's Corey, our co-host slash what else do you want to be called?
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Okay, that's fine. Corey Hall.
Yeah.
In the house.
Yes, sir.
Munching on trail mix.
In Big Mama's house.
Big Mama's. Get that mic level right for you before we start this damn thing. But here we go. This is our big movie extravaganza, Corey. This is our best and worst of 2013.
Oh, boy. Do I get to talk about movies some more?
All right. Well, that's fine. Corey will do his women's fashion review next show.
No, I've been having a lot of, you know, I mean, it's my job.
It's your fucking job.
But I have a lot of people asking me, like, should I go take my niece to Frozen?
All right.
I'm like,
well,
figure that out on your own. I mean,
maybe
really,
you can tell people in the future if they want to know about movies, they can listen to the show, and you will talk about all the movies. Well, that came out in the Oscar nominations. We'll get into that.
I noticed that people don't have, being a critic, you figure things out. Like being a comic.
Yeah.
You realize you think differently than other people.
Yeah.
And I'm both of those things. And I realize people don't have their own I don't know. Do they not have their own ability to evaluate? They look at a movie like Grudge Match.
And they, go,
see the trailers for that.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, yeah, that looks like I want to see that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people are... I think there's people who, there are people I think that don't go to the movies at all enough to the point where they have no frame of reference whatsoever.
I think that's what's
they
happening.
Have no frame of reference to David O. Russell or whoever is. They don't know, like Spike Jonze. They wouldn't know if a movie of his. They, they have no really contemporary frame of reference, and they go, "Well, I liked Rocky in '76, so I'll go to Grudge Match."
Maybe old people like that. I mean, I don't know. But.
I don't know. Yeah. Or and people go, like, I like Woody Allen because I like that Manhattan in 79.
There's also a limit to what I can do.
Yeah.
People come to me, and if they weren't going to see Inside Llewyn Davis, say, or something like that, I can say, no, you should go see it. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
And that will maybe put them over the edge. If they're like, I'm going to go see that Kevin Hart movie.
Right. Yeah.
I can't. I've already lost you. You're already beyond what I can do.
Now, do you, when you judge.
You can't look with your own two eyes at a Kevin Hart commercial and go, that's not funny.
When you criticize, now as a writer, are you writing as, I mean, I know you're describing the movie, but, or maybe it's maybe not in your writing, but in your personal recommendations, do you say, you would like this, or this would be good for you, or this, I liked it, but you would not like it, so don't
go. I try to evaluate the movie based on its criteria within its own genre, first off.
Okay.
How does it compare to other Westerns or science fiction movies or whatever? And then I say, there are times when I go, it will be for certain audiences.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Las Vegas was terrible.
Yeah.
I know the audience they were pitching it to.
Right.
But my argument is always, no matter what lowest common denominator you're aiming for, there's a difference between a good and a bad.
You can do a good or a bad version of Las Vegas.
Right, even if it's if it's pandering to old people, that can be done well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the Grumpy Old Men, the one they do with Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, pretty entertaining.
Okay.
You can sit there and watch that.
Right.
Las Vegas, you want to take a spoon and pull your eyes out.
Okay.
So you have to then evaluate the movie based on. Now, sometimes I will just say, look, personally, I don't care for such and, whatever, Lars von Trier, whoever it is, I can, but I try not to write first person all that often.
Yeah, well, because some people will ask me, my dad, sometimes I'll see stuff and I'll go, I saw this the other day, Dad, but you should not see that because you wouldn't like it.
Well, that's...
I do that a lot. I,
well,
go,
I do that
that's
to you
not
all the time.
You do that to me, and I feel like you pigeonhole me.
You get mad, but I do feel like I'm trying to guess what you'd
yeah,
like.
Yeah, but I think I'm more adventurous than you give me credit for or whatever, and I think... I mean, somebody like our parents or whatever, then you're sort of limiting, who would see it. Or chicks would love it. Like, we'll get to a couple of those today where you go... Well, girls would love this, but this was a big fucking waste of time.
I'm not telling a 24-year-old girl to go watch some 1950s Japanese movie.
Okay,
saying? I'm trying to, I know my audiences are a little bit. Like, okay, I don't know what this is, but I've only had, most of the people who saw American Hustle liked it.
Okay.
I've had maybe four people that didn't like it.
Yeah.
Two of them were you and Sal.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But yeah,
so okay. Maybe it does not speak to the Italian American experience.
You think that something a crime movie involving Italians?
I think
would ring false to Italians who are part of a crime family.
I think you guys wanted it to be The Sopranos, and it's not.
Well,
that.
I think it wants to be Scorsese, and it isn't. But anyway, we'll get to American Hustle. I'm sure that what we're going to do is we're going to give our best here. I think we've each got a top 15. I do anyway. I know, Corey, you had a published list that was in the paper the other day. But
I put out top 10s, and then
You have other ones.
I can pad with some extras.
You can fill it in, yeah. So we're going to do our top 15s, and then we'll have some honorable mentions, and then we'll have our worst. And we might even get to the Oscar nominations, too, because a lot of these movies are going to be Oscar nominated. Mm-hmm. I went out of my way to see. Here's what I will preface my list by saying. I saw every Oscar-nominated Best Picture.
Okay.
And I saw all of the Oscar-nominated documentaries.
Wow, you really did it.
So I really went out of my... Believe me,
did
I was...
Did they nominate 10 this year or 9?
It was 9. Because there's a certain number of votes things have to get before they cross the threshold into being nominated. And I guess 10 movies didn't hit that, so only 9 Best Pictures. And the 5 documentaries...
That's really ridiculous.
I didn't see the Best Animated, but fuck those things, because none of them... Yeah, I'm not going to watch The Croods. Go fuck yourself.
It was a down year for animation.
It was, yeah.
Frozen...
Frozen is good, yeah.
Which everybody asks me to go see.
Good, yeah.
Well, it's a Disney one, so it's the one they invested the most in.
Sure, but I'm not seeing the... I mean, maybe, some years I do see the animated stuff, but I didn't this year, and I don't feel like I missed anything.
Well, you're not a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
So Frozen's not for you.
So I went out literally, I was at the matinee almost every day, sitting with the old people at the Birmingham 8 last week. I'll tell you the stories as I talk about these movies. But
well, hey.
It was quite a week for me last week. But anyway, let's get into it. I'm going to start, if it's okay with you. I'll actually give you my number 15. Because I figured let's have a fight right now because people like those on this show. So my number 15 Best Picture was something called This Is the End.
Oh.
Which was Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg's directorial debut. Those are the guys that wrote Superbad. Of course, everyone knows Seth Rogen from all those Judd Apatow movies, and he had James Franco and all those other guys playing themselves.
The whole Apatow universe.
The whole Apatow guys, Jonah Hill,
yeah.
Danny McBride was in there, Craig Robinson from The Office was in there.
Michael Cera briefly.
Yeah, a lot of real brief cameos in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the end of the world, and they're all at a house party at Franco's house for a
house
party.
Well, the first 15, 20 minutes is a house party. Where a lot of young Hollywood is hanging out.
And there's a lot of inside jokes in that. And
Jason Segel.
Jay Baruchel is really the star of this movie, by the way. I should mention that. He is kind of
Seth Rogen and Jay Baruchel are
really
kind of
the stars
leads,
here.
Yeah.
But you know what? I didn't think this was...
Is on your best list?
This is my best. This is my best. Let's see, I knew it. I knew you hated this thing. But it's on my best because it's inside... And I like that element of it. Did I like the sort of the world ending? I didn't really like the ending of it. But, you know, whenever you do like an apocalypse movie, the ending is always kind of disappointing anyway. But I thought the inside stuff and, you know, this is the only movie I ended up seeing twice, too. That's the other thing. Because a girl wanted to watch this on home video.
Okay.
And I had already seen it at the theater. And I went like, yeah, okay, I'll watch it again. It was pretty good. And I liked it again the second time. So it really held up for me. Very funny, a lot of good laughs from those guys, and I know you hate Danny McBride, and that's probably going to be your biggest criticism.
It wasn't really on my worst. It just wasn't, you know.
It didn't work as well as maybe
on
you
my
wanted
best.
It to.
It's not going to be a fight. It's going to be a mild, you know, a little
okay. But
you big brute. No,
yeah,
I just think it was sloppy.
Okay,
and there were very funny things.
And
I liked kind of that it was unpredictable.
Right.
It did go into crazy, insane.
Yeah,
places.
which is it was
some
very brave.
Of which it shouldn't have gone.
Yeah, some of that stuff didn't work. Like when they get to heaven, the ending is not great. I thought what they did at the end for like their last big laugh. Like you can imagine, like let's say you're going to heaven in a fictional.
I didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I thought that was stupid. I didn't think that's what I expected from Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg.
When did Seth Rogen write this?
Oh, I don't know. Well, you know what? It was a short movie about Jay Baruchel and
you know
and
what it was
doing something
this
else.
This was like there were no women in it really. There was
Emma Watson was in it.
Emma Watson's in it for a minute.
For like 10 minutes maybe.
But it was kind of like if you were 24, like when I used to live in a house with a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
This is kind of what I'd think like.
Yeah.
But instead, they don't have wives or mothers or anything
true.
That they worry about.
Right, like the world is ending. No one's calling their wives or their mothers or anything.
No.
Yeah. They're all just worried about who's going to eat the last Snickers. Exactly. And, you know, but that's funny.
Which
you
is kind of the joke.
Yeah, it is the
but
joke.
But it did kind of strike me as some profound immaturity.
They're self-centered movie stars, and the world is ending, and how do they deal with it? And I think they did a good job.
I guess that was the concept, but I thought it just got a little sloppy.
Okay, so I know, Corey, that's all. I remember you not being a fan of this, and I said, okay, well, let's make it my list.
I thought it was
because honestly, my list is very bereft. There's not a lot of comedy on my list this year.
Well, there wasn't a lot of
exactly,
comedy.
Exactly, but this one I liked, and I have some other comedies on it, but I like this at the end. I recommend it. So that's my 15, Corey. So give us a 15, Corey. We'll go from there.
Here is an actual comedy that I thought was fairly okay. good. Okay. That no one saw, but I thought it was fairly enjoyable.
Really? What's that called?
It was called In a World.
In a World. Well, you stumped me on that one.
Written and directed by Lake Bell.
Okay.
And it's about voiceover artists.
Okay.
Specifically, people who cut trailer voices.
All right.
And so, you know, it was very enjoyable. Lake Bell is a... You know, an actress with a phenomenal body.
Right.
Her body's insane, by the way.
I don't know if I trust her as a creative force in Hollywood, but...
No, but you know what? This was a very entertaining little indie movie. It wasn't, like,
sure.
spectacular, but it was pretty solidly done. Mm-hmm. So she's a voiceover actress, and her dad is a voiceover... Fred Melamed,
okay,
who is an actual voiceover guy, plays her dad, and they're competing to do, like, the new... Hunger Games kind of trailer.
Okay.
And there, you know, there's a competition, and Ken Marino is the other guy that's going up for the voiceovers. And it was pretty funny. If you like that whole trailer thing, you know, how can we survive when the aliens...
Was it like Christopher Guest like look? Was it
no, it was
mock documentary
it's
or
a
was
straight up
straight,
no, it's
a movie.
It's a straight you know, comedy, okay. But it was funny in that, you know, just inside that little tiny world,
okay.
The arguments that goes on. Her dad is just monstrously self-involved and like a party guy. And I thought it was pretty well done. Dimitri right. Martin's in it.
Okay. I might check that out. That sounds
I mean,
good.
It's not like, look,
it,
this is an indie movie. This sure. is not a big budget movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a tiny little kind of comedy.
Well, that's good.
But I thought it was fun.
I got some weird movies. We'll get to one. Actually, the one thing I want to do too as we're talking about these is tell you where you can see these. Because it's such a weird world out there now with all the streaming services and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This is the End is available for rental now. It'll probably be on HBO or something before too long. But In a World is only available to be purchased either on DVD, Blu-ray, or you can purchase the digital version for about $16. So they haven't really gotten this out there. And that's what happens with a lot of indies is they don't get very good distribution.
No.
And people would see this if it was on Netflix. Probably people would watch in 2 seconds.
I think if people watched it on HBO or
yeah,
something, they
would
enjoy
they would
it.
Dig it. Yeah, and but so anyway, that one you're gonna have to spend some dough to see right now, and it might still be at a indie cinema
somewhere,
or,
yeah,
an art house
yeah, depending
if you have
on where
one.
You live.
All right, now this movie, I don't know where the fuck you see it. Well, I saw this on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know where you see this originally. This is a completely weird movie, but I wanted to reflect some odd choices in my list with things that I thought were brave and different. And this movie's called Computer Chess. Do you know what this is? Have you seen this?
I have heard of it. I have
yeah, it's
seen
it. It's on Netflix now, so anyone can watch it with a Netflix, so spend your $8. And what it's supposed to look like is a documentary from 1982 about a convention of computer programmers who all bring their chess programs. And they all meet in like a hotel ballroom, and they have a chess tournament where their computers all play each other.
Gotcha.
So that's the premise. And it looks, you know, it's supposed to be like found footage, I guess. You would say of this thing. So it's shot on like early 80s black and white video.
Okay.
That's the format of it. So it's all smeary and black and white. And, but of course, you know, things are not as they seem. And it starts to turn into almost a Kubrickian sort of, you know, artificial intelligence versus man.
They descent into madness.
Yeah. And there's characters who start to, you know, react to the computers on a different level. And of course there's wacky antics at the hotel because there's there's something called a marriage encounter going on. If you know what that is, that's sort of an 80s relic. That's where like couples go.
A couple's retreat.
And that's going on at the same hotel. So there's some overlap between the computer programmers and the marriage encounter. And it's just really weird, but I really enjoyed it. It's a really different fucking weird thing.
Yeah, I have not
checked
it out yet.
And it's funny. I mean, it's supposed to be funny. I mean, at some point it does sort of drop the, you know, like when they do like mock documentaries, even like, you know, like Curb Your Enthusiasm at a certain point was just like, you know, there was no illusion that they were shooting a documentary at a certain point.
Right.
Like the original special was like that. And this one sort of does that too. There's points where like, there's no reason anyone's filming this.
Right.
The guy sitting alone in his hotel room, there's no, there shouldn't be a cameraman there for this, you know? But so it does sort of break that wall of the documentary and become more of a narrative. And I think they do some stuff where it's like security footage. But it gets weird. It's super fucking nerdy. But I'm kind of a super fucking nerd, and I liked it. So it's worth checking out. Again, I'm not recommending this to everybody, but if you're adventurous and you like weird shit,
okay,
this is pretty weird. And, it was pretty short. It was like 80 minutes or something. So it's on Netflix.
All right, I'll take a look for it.
Computer Chess. Go watch that.
Yes, sir.
That's a weird movie. But
all right, then.
All right, what do you got, Corey? At 14.
Oh, I got it at 14.
What do you have at
14? Speaking of weird movies.
Okay, give us a weird one.
It's a movie called that no one saw.
No one saw.
It is on Netflix now, though.
Okay.
A movie called Crystal Fairy and the Magic Cactus.
Yes, that's in my queue, but I have not watched
it. All right, starring Michael Cera and Gabby Hoffman.
Yeah.
And nobody else. And
yeah, that's on Netflix. I know that much about it.
Basically, Michael Cera is kind of a rich asshole. He's playing a real asshole. He's kind of playing the version of Michael Cera that is in This is the End.
Okay.
Maybe not that much of a jerk, but a little.
We can't both drink at the same time.
We can't drink at the same time. I know. Well, who's going to work the dummy? Who will work the dummy?
So what kind of movie is this, Crystal Fairy?
It's really bizarre is what it is. Yeah. It's really. Okay. Michael Cera goes down to Brazil in search of this psychotropic cactus.
Yeah.
That is apparently just incredibly mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And so he goes down with some Brazilian friends. I don't know.
Is he playing Michael Cera or he's a character?
He's a character. Okay. But he's some kind of like trust fund kid or something. Yeah. Whatever. He's, you know, apparently a rich New Yorker that can hang out in Brazil. And he gets in a van with these Brazilian dudes who are all very laid back and stony. And they run into Gabby Hoffman,
okay,
who is Crystal Fairy is her name. Her real name's like Alana or something. Yeah. But she's a really super freaked out hippie. And she just now Gabby Hoffman was just on Girls this week.
Okay, yeah.
Playing basically the same character.
Neurotic,
insane.
Right, she was actually kind of the best thing on this Girls this
week.
Yeah,
well, there's a lot of that in Crystal Fairy.
Yeah, okay, all right.
That bush is also on display.
You're ruining Girls for everyone who hasn't seen it yet this week. But
not just the cactus, but Gabby Hoffman spends a lot of time naked in this movie.
All right.
But I just thought it was very kind of...
Yeah.
Untraditional in its storytelling. It just kind of unfurled as they wander around meandering looking for this cactus, and they're trying to steal it out of people's backyards.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of look, you can't tell. Speaking of not sending people to this, anybody over like 44 is not going to like this movie at all.
Okay.
And in fact, I'm probably almost too old to watch this movie, but I did really kind of like its unpredictable, weird,
sure,
funky energy to it. And Michael Cera's funny, being kind of just an asshole. I like Michael Cera a lot. I really liked Youth in Revolt. Liked that a lot a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And so when and I love Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim's great.
So I'm kind of a Michael Cera fan.
I am too.
So some people don't enjoy that, but
Superbad's one of the best comedies ever, I think. Yeah. And he's great. Now don't you think Michael Cera when he gets old is gonna be weird and kind of like, he's going to be like old Judge Reinhold or something. It's going to be like...
Well, it might be like Fred Savage.
Fred Savage, yeah.
Well, Fred Savage was a kid actor, but Michael Cera... no, he's in his mid-20s now already, so...
Okay, all right.
He's
got that Ralph Macchio baby face thing.
Well,
going,
I don't know how that character is going to evolve. That's a good question.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he's not going to play that kid from Juno.
But look, hey, Kurt Russell went from being a kid actor to being a grown-up actor.
All right. All right, well, let's stick with the weird vein. Here's another movie that nobody saw. Again, you can get this on Netflix. And now, here's the thing about this. I can't talk that... This is literally a movie that I will ruin if I say too much. Because part of the reason this made my list... First of all, this movie... the movies I left off my list that I chose like this movie to be, you're going to want to punch me in the nose for. But I'm picking it because it does something, maybe one of the best things I've ever seen in a movie. It's called Rubberneck.
Oh.
And it stars Alex Karpovsky, who's also on Girls. He plays Ray.
Okay.
This is a movie that he co-wrote, directed, and stars in. And the general plot is he's a guy who's working in a laboratory in Boston. And there's like a cute girl at his work. The opening scene is there at a party together. And, you know, they're friends or whatever. Well, they both get drunk and they hook up.
Yeah.
And he falls in love with her. And she's real hot. And he's, you know, he looks like Alex Karpovsky. So he's sort of, you know, he's kind of the weirdo.
Yeah. What is with that lip? Is that a hair lip? Did he get a...
I'm not sure if he was bitten by a dog. I think I've heard the story. I think he was, like, attacked by a dog or something.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look into that. But it sort of adds to his character, though, doesn't it? Having that weird lip.
Sure.
Anyway, so Alex Karpovsky sort of, he becomes infatuated with his coworker. Now, it's done in a very indie kind of longing romance kind of, can this nerdy guy get the girl movie? So that's your setup. Okay. And I loved it.
Yeah.
Now, at a certain point, and this is why I got to shut up about this if anyone's going to enjoy this.
Well, don't spoil it.
I'm trying not to. What the movie does well is it really makes you root for Alex Karpovsky's character. Yeah. You really root for this guy. You really go like, this girl's a bitch and fuck her and he's a nice guy and she already banged him once. All she could do is go out with this guy. And, you know, as a guy, as you know, as kind of a fat, ugly guy, you relate to it a little bit. And you
as
go,
a dude, what's longing yeah. for chicks?
Yeah, as a dude uh-huh. who's been through that, you kind of go, man, if this girl would just put out for this guy. And anyway... It and then about two-thirds of the way through, it takes a turn.
Now you're
and
really
then you
wanting
go,
to spoil
I don't
this.
Want to spoil I'm stopping right
you're
there.
Desperately
All I will tell you
spoil.
Is this is what this movie does better than any other movie, is it creates a character that you really root for and you really like and you really want to get what he wants, what his character wants, you want him to get.
Well, you did.
I did, yes. But that's the point of the movie. It's so well made that mm-hmm. that it can only work in that way.
And who directed this?
Alex Karpovsky directed.
Okay.
So and then something happens where you kind of go, "Holy fucking shit! What was that?"
Right.
So it's great. Again, by the end of this, a lot of you will okay. But as like a film nerd, as a guy who went to film school, as a guy who's written scripts, what he does in this with his character is pretty amazing. And the way that the movie works, it's completely unconventional, and it really, like, I literally screamed. I was watching this movie Home Alone on television, you know, on Netflix, and I actually audibly was yelling at the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was, you know, I was a black person watching Freddy try to kill a teenager.
How dare you?
I was yelling like that during it, because it's pretty, I don't even want to say too much, but... Rubberneck really shine.
You're desperate to spoil it. Move on.
I'd love
movie.
To discuss this movie with somebody who saw it, but nobody did. Right. So go ahead. If you trust me for a minute, watch Rubberneck on Netflix. I think you'll like it.
Okay.
And anyway, so that's my 13. Give me a 13, Corey.
13. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
Hachi Machi. What am I going to do for 13? I am going to go with the controversial Francis Ha.
Francis Ha.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed away from this thing.
Yes, sir.
tell everybody what Francis Ha is.
It's directed by Noah Baumbach.
Yeah.
Starring his girlfriend, Greta Gerwig, who now has red hair.
I saw her at the Golden Globes. Yeah, I didn't know who she was.
I didn't recognize her.
I was like, she's usually a blonde.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I totally didn't recognize
her.
Well, it's like when you see Zooey Deschanel as a blonde in Elf.
Yeah,
it throws you.
You kind of go, oh.
She's a blonde without bangs in Elf, and it really throws you.
You don't know who it is,
Well, the big eyes bring you back in. But Greta Gerwig does not look like herself with red hair.
Yeah.
She was in Greenberg.
Yeah, she's been in
another movie I really
liked. She was in that awful Arthur movie that came out a few years ago.
She's been in some movies that weren't so good. But this one,
she's a good actress.
I liked Frances Ha.
Okay.
It is kind of reminiscent of Girls at its best, not at its more annoying.
Well, yeah.
As that show can often be.
Right.
She's just kind of like she's a loser chick, which you don't see that story very often.
Yeah.
I mean, when it's a loser girl in the movies, it's like Sandra Bullock. She's a really successful and popular journalist, but she just doesn't have time to let a man in her life.
She's one haircut away from getting the man of her dreams.
Right. She thinks, you know, people who have husbands and families, that's silly.
Yeah.
She's a career woman, or it's too late for her to find love, or she's Renee Zellweger and she had a couple cupcakes and suddenly Colin Firth won't bone her.
Yeah.
I don't know, but like, usually you don't see a story of just a woman Maybe Kristen Wiig in Bridesmaids was kind of that character. But this is she can't really get her shit together.
Sure.
Some of the girls, kind of Alex Karpovsky mumblecore, characters are in this. Adam Driver's in this.
Okay.
That whole mumblecore world.
Yeah.
She was in a movie called Hannah Takes the Stairs. Which I think, is that what it was? Anyway.
Yeah, that I know, I'm familiar with that movie. Right. I didn't see it, but I know.
Greta Gerwig made a bunch of these guys.
She made a bunch of movies
no money.
Right.
Before they started making real movies. Anyway, Frances Ha is fun. It's in black and white. It's really kind of gorgeous looking black and white.
All right.
Like, she does this thing. She just kind of does spontaneous, stupid things. It's kind of Albert Brooksian.
Okay.
In that, like, she's at a dinner party and people are talking about how much they love Paris. Mm-hmm. And that they're like, oh, well, we have an apartment and, you know, you could stay there anytime.
Yeah.
And she just takes them up on it and goes,
oh, okay.
You know, it's funny. I'm going to be there like next month. And then just books a flight she can't afford. Okay. And ends up going to Paris and like walking around by herself. I liked it a lot. It was beautifully shot by Noah Baumbach. Very uses a lot of 80s music kind of cues. But it's a well-made, interesting film. Not for everybody. Some people will hate Frances Ha because it's about a self-centered New York girl who can't quite get her shit together. But, you know, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, apparently this is on Netflix as well.
Yes, sir.
I have not seen it, but maybe I'll watch it. Who knows? Frances Ha. I feel like I've kind of seen these movies with her, and I kind of feel like maybe there's not a whole lot left there. I watched her in a couple things.
What was the other one, Lola Versus?
Yeah. I mean, I like her. She's good.
It is definitely in the Greta Gerwig genre.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But I thought, since it's Noah Baumbach, who's a great director, or a very good director.
Guy you like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did The Squid and the Whale and Greenberg. I think he's a really...
Hey, Greenberg was
I hated Rachel, or no, Margot at the Wedding.
Yeah, I don't think I saw that one.
That one I hated. I really hated it. Sometimes the movies about... awful people are awful.
Yeah.
See August Osage County if you want to see that.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, you said you're good with that.
Thank you for that. All right, I'll give you number 12 here, and this was this movie was nominated for Best Foreign Film of 2012, but I don't think it really played anywhere here until 2013, and they also made an English language. They shot this simultaneously in, I believe, Norwegian and English.
Okay.
And so it's the English version you're going to end up watching because it's on Netflix. And it's called Kon-Tiki.
Uh-huh.
It's about a bunch of guys who set off from South America trying to get to the, what would you call that? The South Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And because the theory is that a lot of the stuff that was in these the South Pacific on these islands that this guy was studying reminded him of stuff that you would see in, like, Chile and places like that. So he thought that the trade winds, if you build a raft and you get on it, that the trade winds will have you float to the South Pacific. Now, he did this in the 40s, I believe. Might have been the early 50s, but he did this, and it was dangerous as all fuck, as you can imagine.
Was it like a Viking boat that he built?
Yeah, they were like, it was like, no, it literally is like a raft, and then in the middle, there's like a hut.
Mm.
So if you want to get out of the rain, you can do that. But it's not even like, you know, it's not a boat at all.
It's not a sail.
It's like, because he wanted to use, like, what could they have built if they wanted to leave the western coast of South America? What would they have it to, you know, and there's like a certain kind of wood that they get, and it's really in depth that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a sucker for any kind of like lost at sea survival movie. Yeah. Like I love that. Like I loved Life of Pi. That was my best movie last year. And I'm a sucker for all that stuff. And Kon-Tiki's real good in that way. And there's some cool effects. There's a scene with a shark that is like how the fuck did they even make that? Because, you know, it's like one of those small movies, but the digital effects are really good.
Yeah.
You know, where they just sort of, and it's a true story, and there's even a documentary. If you like the movie, you can go ahead and watch this documentary that I believe won Best Documentary in the 50s, where they use all the guys had movie cameras on the boat when it really happened. And you can see this documentary, I believe that's on YouTube or something, just search for it. That was called also called Kon-Tiki, where you can see the real footage of it. But it's an amazing story of these guys who were basically nuts, you know.
It was a big,
and a big book, too. Yeah, the book was a big deal. The guy who did it wrote a book.
Thor Heyerdahl.
Yeah, and then it became, of course, the movie Kon-Tiki, the documentary, and now this film. And it's real good. It's in English, even though it is a foreign movie, technically. But, you know, if you like adventure on the high seas and, like, guys trying to overcome hardship and stuff, it's really great. It's a beautiful looking movie too. So it's fun.
Well, you want adventure on the high seas?
Yeah. What do you got?
All is Lost. Is my number 12.
Oh, All is Lost. Now that's one I haven't.
That
seen.
Is about Robert Redford on a boat all by himself.
Now I need to see
ocean.
This. I see. I but you know what?
Yeah.
I'm trying to find where you can see these, and I don't think you can see.
All is Lost might still be in theaters.
It might be. Yeah. I'll look for
it.
It
may still be in theaters.
About it. I'll look it up.
Yeah, All is Lost. And literally, there is probably 10 lines of 8 lines of dialogue.
Yeah, because he's by himself, right?
And he's on a boat, and it's like a little yacht, a mini little kind of private yacht.
Apparently, you can buy the DVD or Blu-ray, but you know what? I think when they have that might even be like a pre-sale.
Mm-hmm.
The link. I'm on canistream.it, but
yeah.
I believe even if those links. So it's go to the theaters if you want to see All Is Lost. But
mm-hmm.
But it's real good, you say.
Yeah.
It's a guy in a boat and he's lost.
He crashes.
That's the whole thing.
He crashes into a floating shipping container.
Okay.
And then is pretty much just stranded as his uh-huh. boat slowly kind of going down. And it's actually really compelling and good.
Yeah.
All the things you liked about Life of Pi. It's not as lyrical
right.
or...
Well,
poetic.
Again, this is a movie that I didn't see out of not being able to see it more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have seen this movie if I would have known where to go.
I think it was here at the Maple.
Yeah, see, that's something that's not really in my wheelhouse, but mm-hmm. it's at the Maple. So, all right, I'll look for that. All is Lost. Sounds good.
Yes, sir.
Well, let's keep the adventure on the high seas going with my number 11.
And, you know, just Robert Redford. He's that good.
Yeah, exactly.
He's, you know, he's damned good, that guy. He might have a career in the show business.
He might make it one day, guy. Yeah. But Corey, what's he going to do when he loses his looks? I mean, that's the big problem with
that. Is the mind blowing thing, though? I mean, that's the like.
But people say he's ugly now, but I think he looks like a
Only because he looked like Adonis. He looked like.
I think I'm too young to remember him looking like Adonis.
Well, if you look at watch the Twilight Zone episode where he
plays
the one Nothing in the Dark. Is that
I forget the name of it, but yeah,
there's one where he shows up as Death on an old lady's door. Look at him in that thing. Guy looks like Apollo. He came down from Mount Olympus.
Well, he just sort of always looked old, because I guess I didn't remember him until, The Electric Cowboy or whatever that movie was. So he was kind of old then in the 80s.
If you watch him like The Sting.
Right, The Sting or Butch Cassidy or something.
The Way We Were.
The problem is, I think when you see somebody old, it's hard to remember. Like, with women, for me, it is. Like, if I see an old actress and then they go, well, you got to see her in the 60s. And I watched the 60s, and I go, she still looks old to me. There's something about, mentally, it's hard to imagine somebody hot. But, Natalie Wood always looks hot to me because she never got old.
I mean...
So, I don't know. There's
the Robert Redford we're picturing is probably in his, I still, when I think of Robert Redford, I don't think of him now.
Right.
When you say Robert Redford, I think of him in, The Candidate.
Okay, yeah.
Which is one of my all-time favorite movies, by the way. That's a fantastic movie.
Is that Robert Altman made The Candidate?
No.
No, some other guy.
No, but it's great.
Okay.
The Candidate is one of the best political comedies ever made.
Okay. All right, well, let's, like I said, Adventure in the High Seas. Let's keep this going with number 11. Maybe this is on your list, too, it's Oscar-nominated. It's called Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks.
Oh!
Yeah, this was great. I mean, look, it's funny because I came into Captain Phillips going, I know the story. I saw I didn't read the book that Captain Phillips wrote that is based on this, but I read a book about the killing of Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
And the idea is it was the same guys that took down the Somali pirates, literally like the same team.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the same guys did both operations. And so in the lead up to telling you about how they got Osama bin Laden, they told you the whole story of how they took down these Somali pirates when they hijacked Captain Phillips. So I went I'm in for this movie, and it's Paul Greengrass, who made United 93, which was a really intense movie.
The
second and third Bourne movies he made, too. So he's a real good director.
Yeah.
And it's intense. It's exciting. Even when you – because there was a lot of stuff I didn't know, some of the smaller details about, how much of the resistance the crew guys put up. That was kind of surprising. And just the realism that they shot the movie with. It all looks
– Yeah.
I mean, I guess the boat – Tom Hanks was on Letterman saying, the boat was really out to sea.
Well,
and they really
– Now, I don't know what the maritime law is.
Right.
But don't you think that, somebody like Maersk could hire security?
Well, one thing that's not in the movie is that if you look at Africa and you look at, I don't know, it's not the Horn, but whatever that eastern hunk that sits out where Somalia is, above that there's a gulf. And what they do is they now have an international fleet of ships patrolling that area because it was the really bad pirate area.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the pirates then decided to go off the east coast into the Indian Ocean. And that's where they got Captain Phillips. So they actually, like, all of the world's militaries blocked up this one area, cut it off from pirates.
Right.
And then they couldn't. Yeah, but you would think one rocket launcher would have saved these guys.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah,
like,
I hear
like, couldn't they hire a private security firm? Like, because in
Captain Phillips, I get what you're saying, yeah.
It's like four guys with AK-47s
yeah.
take this giant tanker ship.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they hired a couple Blackwater guys. Right. I mean,
no, I hear
they
you.
Would solve the problem.
You know what? I hear you. I don't
one
know.
Trained guy with a rifle
well,
could have picked off this
you
whole
know,
Somali
that's the same
boat.
Thing with you yeah. could stop hijackers on planes
yeah.
if you had air marshals.
Yeah, I know. Well, they do.
They do now
they
after,
right,
after,
right, right,
after our World
right,
Trade Centers are right. gone. But no, Captain Phillips is great. Tom Hanks is really good in it. In the beginning, I was kind of Tom Hanks with a Boston accent didn't really work for me. But as you get into
he's
it,
he's from Maine. He's
Maine.
A,
oh, I've,
no, he's not from Boston.
I take
he's from
it.
Maine.
I take it back. I yeah, take right. it all back. But
now, would you like a stuffy?
It's an exciting.
What are you from Moonsocket?
Action-packed movie. And it's funny because when I was looking this up after I did some research and the guy that there's one guy that they caught and I'm kind of ruining the movie a little bit, but it's a true story. And the actor they got to play the one pirate is the guy who's like he's serving time now. And
oh.
He looks exactly like the guy. It's amazing that they went and found. I guess Minneapolis is full of Somalis.
Yeah.
And they went to Minneapolis to cast the guys to play the pirates, and they did a great job. And it's a real exciting movie.
Well,
so,
you know, it's weird. Okay, so Detroit has like the world's biggest, or outside of the Middle East.
Yeah.
Has the United States' biggest, like, Arabic, Lebanese.
Sure. Yeah.
A lot of Lebanese Arabs, a lot of.
But they say we have more Arabs than like Lebanon or something. It's that it's not literally like we have. More,
we have a lot of Yemenis.
Yeah, right.
A lot of anyway. So there's what happens is somebody moves over and then their whole family starts coming over.
Yeah,
and it's like an exodus. Minneapolis has Hmong people.
Yeah,
Hmong with the H. It's like a silent H. They have weird like yeah. So Somali and Hmong, they have weird kind of. Subculture.
Yeah, and the guy that yeah. the guy Barkhad Abdi, he's
yeah.
nominated for supporting actor at the Oscars, and I guess he was like driving a limo or something.
Yeah,
and they found mm-hmm. this guy, and he looks exactly like those those scary
yeah.
guy. You know, it's same Black Hawk Down, same deal where they're crazy and they're eating that fucking plant that's like a meth.
They're chewing on
stuff
or something.
And I watched a documentary about the yeah. captain, the real incident too, and they said that prevented seasickness as well. And that's why
is
they
it like,
need
like
it.
Cocaine leaf. Kind
it's
of
it's
thing?
Some sort of cocaine leaf, but yeah, it mm-hmm. gives them really fast reflexes, and for the pirates, it stopped them from being sick.
Wow!
So it's a great movie though. Captain Phillips,
yeah,
really good. So
that is, I had it like 16th or so.
Okay, yeah.
So
right.
I liked it a lot though. It was yeah. good.
Good.
It is a little bit. There's a little element of like, hey, let's wait till the Navy shows up and crushes these brown people with the grapes. So
but it could never be more appropriate time to do that, though.
Yeah, like, I mean,
when they take your ship. I mean, but let me say, if Captain Phillips isn't on yeah. that rescue boat, they just fucking torpedo that thing,
oh,
right?
Sure. Oh,
I mean,
sure.
they just take
yeah,
a chopper
no drama.
And a Sidewinder missile, and that's it.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So the fact that he's actually kidnapped makes it great. But I see what you mean. It is a little.
There's a little
you
kind
could
of
be a little rah-rah right wing.
There's a little jingoism to it. But yeah. on the other hand, this is also kind of what happens when the first and third worlds clash.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see, and I think they're it's somewhat sympathetic to the.
Right.
I think the problem with the movie maybe is that only really one of the pirates comes into any kind of. Developed characters.
Sure.
The other
sure.
ones are all just kind of angry
well,
guys.
Well, you know, these guys, though, they were all in the real story, and the movie doesn't make this perfectly clear, but the guy that was captured was 18. I think they were all
yeah,
teenagers.
All kids, yeah.
And, you know, the guy, the real guy was 5'2". The guy that was captured, they weren't even, like,
I
big,
will say, the,
you know, undernourished.
Paul Greengrass did a great thing where he did not introduce the Somali actors to the American
right,
cast
I heard that too. When they
until the scene.
Yeah.
So then the scene where they bust in and break
yeah.
into the boat,
yeah.
you can see Tom Hanks.
Scared
as fuck. What is this dude? So,
who are these crazy jungle men?
Great directing by Paul Greengrass.
Yeah,
it doesn't
good.
Feel claustrophobic, even though they're in a tiny life raft and they're in a boat for a lot of it. You know, I mean, the whole
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's
well
good.
Done.
It's different from like Life is Pi. It's not all in like a little tiny boat. They're on Navy ships. There's helicopters
sure.
flying around. It's a great movie. A great action movie.
Yeah.
And a really good true story.
I would not
too,
recommend starting a fight with the United States Navy.
Yeah, don't
I would
fuck with the Navy. Yeah, that's,
I would,
why not just call this Don't Fuck with the Navy?
Yeah, they could have called it that. I would not recommend that course of action, sir.
You want to make fun of Navy guys now? Go ahead, fucker.
If there's one branch of the service that you're outnumbered, powered by, it's the Navy.
If you're out to sea, don't fuck with
the
Navy.
They got us. Yeah, they got that all covered. Yeah.
All right. Well, you got to give me an 11, Corey, and then we're into our
top. Oh, my goodness. You know, my number 11 is going to win the Academy Award.
Oh, jeez.
And it's going to be it's going to take the whole prize. It's 12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave.
Which is a movie that I can't deny that it's good.
Yeah. I saw it, so.
It's not a movie I am ever going to want to watch again.
Well, that's a problem with it, yeah.
I'm never going to return to it. There's movies like that. I mean, there's...
Sure, yeah.
I can't remember the title because it's like 37 days, 12 minutes, 14, whatever. There's a movie about like getting a girl who has to get an abortion in Poland in the 80s.
Okay.
Or in Romania under Ceausescu. Awesome movie. I'll never return and watch it again.
Right.
You know, that came out a few years ago. The Lives of Others about like East German
spies. Yeah, I saw The Lives of Others. That was good.
Great movie, but you don't want to go back relive the misery of these people's lives.
Well, it's like Schindler's List or something. You just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone sees that once and that's it. That you're done.
So 12 Years a Slave, I'm not going to be returning to anytime soon.
Nah, me neither.
And I understand also the argument a lot of people, including Armin White, who was just kicked out of the New York Film Critics Circle, mm-hmm. who hated the movie and heckled Steve McQueen when they gave it an award in the New York Film Critics Circle. I get kind of the kickback from certain black writers who don't like it because they think it's, I don't know, it's like letting white people off the hook. They're like, go see, it's like a confessional booth.
Well, my problem, I like the movie. It's not in my top 15. It's on my honorable mentions there.
Sure.
Because I did like it. It's a great story. One of my problems I had with it was like, it was, you know, it's a power. Everyone says this is such a powerful movie, but, you know, sometimes you can have too much power.
It's a little too
And
much.
I feel like the beating, just the constant fucking beating. Yeah. It's like, we know slaves are bad. We got it. Like, we're not dumb. We're like, we know who the good guys are in this movie. And the movie just, it's just beating you. And I also thought, and especially one scene with Paul Dano, who's one of the slave masters.
A little over
the top. He used the N-word like 5,000 times, and there's no need. Because I have to remember the thing about the N-word. And look, I'm not an expert in, you know, the N-word. But, you know, back then it wasn't, like, he like goes, are you a man or are you a new? And it's just like, the word didn't have the power that it has now. Well, it was really just a word. And it just seems like that was a modern thing.
Do this and say, take Django Unchained and 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
And count the number of
I'm sure somebody has, and I'm sure Django wins.
Mm-hmm.
And it did bother me in Django because there it really felt just kind of cheap. Yeah. But in this movie, it's like, you know, we get that he's a bad... It's like, you know, it's like... I remember learning this in film school when they would talk about Western villains, and it's like, you know he's a villain because he kicked the dog.
Yeah, and he's
like, both
got
guys,
a black hat.
Both guys have guns. They're both trying to kill each other, but the guy who kicked the dog is the bad guy. And I go, you don't need to kick the dog. We know that the slave owners are the bad guys.
Well,
and so they sort of just made it like...
I don't know if you could make
villainy.
A... I don't know if you could make a fair-handed portrayal of slavery.
No, but you...
Because
you,
slavery was...
But you can overdo it to the point it annoys the viewer. The point of having the guy say the N-word is to make him a bad guy. Okay, but once we know he's a bad guy, you can move on with the story. We don't have to watch these beatings that go on for 5 minutes at a time.
Armin White
it's too
said
much.
Armin White said it was torture porn.
Okay.
And you know what? The difference between this and Django is that you know it's building up to Django getting revenge.
Yeah.
Because
it's
Tarantino.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And you get the release of... and also you get comedy because it's a Tarantino movie.
Yeah.
This movie had nothing funny in it.
Well,
there's no outlet. There's no break. You know what I mean? There's no laughs.
Well, look, it's a great story. It is
a great story.
The guy wrote a story.
But it's painful to watch.
He wrote a book. It is. I think it's a better movie than Django, just in my opinion.
Sure.
And I liked it,
Django gave you some relief in that it had humor in it.
Right.
And had an outlet.
You're totally right. You never want to see this again. You respect that they did it.
Yeah.
You know, to me, you know,
Michael Fassbender's great.
Yeah, he's good. I mean,
he's
now the
crazy
actors are
evil.
Good.
The problem is the guys are so ridiculous. The slave owners.
Yeah,
Sarah Paulson is the evil slave wife.
It's overdone. It's too much evil.
On parts of it, I was fascinated.
Right,
like you're actually fascinated by like when they were cutting the sugar cane and stuff.
Yeah.
The actual plantation life was really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then you're right. There's another scene of him. There's a scene where he's like hanging by a rope.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
And it's just torturous.
It sort of got to the point where, like, We know the guy was tortured. We don't need to see... you know, in the third act, you're going to just introduce more beatings. Like, we've seen the beatings.
We're bashing a good movie.
It is a good movie, but
it's hard to watch.
Those are the reasons it's not in my top 10 or whatever. Because
it's probably 11.
Will win the Oscar because people are like, it's so brave to do that. And I go, well, it's also... You know, be a little less brave and serve the story more.
Yeah.
Have the action serve the story more. It's emotional enough without beating you over the head.
It had a political point to make, but also I think if you look at Steve McQueen's other movies, they're kind of about sadomasochism. Mm. Obviously, The Shame was about a sex addict.
Okay.
There's a kind of a weird undercurrent of kinkiness. Well, to this movie, but anyway,
it's good. It's good. Again, this is something I don't.
The ending's a little bit too neatly tied together.
Yeah, it was emotional. I could see people getting welled up at this because it is a really good true story.
It's a great performance. The guy's got the most unpronounceable name, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, Ejiofor. Yeah. He's a great actor.
Yeah, good
and
actor.
It's a good performance.
Very good. Good movie. So
he was in. He's the one black guy that's been in a Woody Allen movie. He was in Melinda.
Okay.
Or Miranda.
What?
Melinda.
It's called Melinda, and I didn't see it. That's what it's called.
I remember this though. His character's name in it, just to show you how out of touch Woody is, was named Ellis Moonglow.
Of course, it was.
Because that's
was he
what
in a jazz trio.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
of course, he was.
He was.
Of course, why else would there
he
be a
was
black
a jazz
guy?
Pianist I'm named done. Ellis Moonglow.
We're gonna get to Woody before we're done here today. Okay. My number 10 movie. We're into our top 10, and this is gonna be on your list too, so we can both knock this off our list here. The Wolf of Wall Street by Martin Scorsese.
That's my number 7,
and it's great. I mean, look, here's the thing with this movie: the first hour, and I literally, because you had told me like, well, it's great, and then it gets bad, and I only saw this like last Monday or whatever. You literally can time it. I think it's an hour and 6 minutes in. There's something happens in the plot. I could even say it. It's probably not that big a deal, but you know, he breaks up with the first wife at about an hour and 6 minutes.
Okay.
In. And the movie takes kind of a downturn and it sort of just go. And the problem is there's 2 hours left of it. Basically.
Well,
and you know, the first, that hour and 6 minutes was the best hour and 6 minutes of any movie made this year. That's fantastic.
It's pretty
amazing.
Tremendous.
It's kinetic. It's funny.
Matthew McConaughey
is fascinating.
Comes in here.
All those guys are great.
He comes in. He's in for like 15 minutes if he's in there at all.
Yeah,
if that's
maybe
10 minutes.
Yeah, two scenes pretty much.
And he rips.
Yeah.
He's
great. Yeah.
He's got this monologue that he gives to Leonardo DiCaprio's character about, you don't really want to make money for the clients. It's about making money for you.
Yeah.
And it's just, he does this whole shtick.
Yeah.
Amazing
stuff. Yeah, he's great. I mean, Leo's great. Jonah Hill is great. And then there's this cast of, like, the other brokers who help him start this firm.
Yeah.
And they're all just, like, character actors or they're guys you've seen in commercials or whatever. And they're all just really funny and interesting, and they look like kind of real dudes. It's not a stream of movie stars. It's not every young actor in Hollywood. It's a bunch of chubby guys, and it's... You know, John Bernthal is in there from Walking Dead, who's very good as a big meathead guy who was helping him launder money and stuff. It's a fun movie. The problem is it's 3 fucking hours, and the last 2 hours are not as fun as the first.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of go, oh, it's just a little too much. This would be the best movie of the year, but it's a little.
You wonder how much cocaine.
Too much,
how
right.
much cocaine is there?
Right.
Because they seem to have done all of it.
Well, and the Quaaludes, that's the big thing in this
again,
movie.
Again, much like 12 Years a Slave, it establishes its point and then lingers.
Yeah, okay, that's a fair
There's a
fair
whole segment where
criticism.
they're on a boat that's in choppy waters.
Yeah.
On a yacht, and they're flipping out.
Yeah, there's a whole like third act action movie that's sort of shoehorned into it's part of the real story. It's
I know,
true
but
life
it doesn't
thing.
Add much.
Yeah, it doesn't add much. And
because you know what's going to happen to this guy no matter what.
Yeah, you know how it ends. Basically.
Although there is great stuff. The Quaalude bit, the whole thing.
Everything with the loot, where they find the bottle. Because I had to Wikipedia Quaaludes after, because they're like a drug that they don't even make anymore. I mean, I think they say that in the movie at one point, but they found it. Jonah was like, I got a bottle of lemons. And then, like, lemons were like the best make of Quaaludes, and they find them, and they're all happy. And it's just these guys are giddy for drugs, and it's amazing. It's really fun. And the broad they got, that Australian broad, that's a delight.
That broad they got.
What a
that broad. The game's on her.
What a piece, eh?
What a piece of ass.
What a nice noggin.
I ain't no fag. I licked that butt.
And you see the whole thing, too. It's nice. So
you do see the whole thing.
And it's a really fun. Look, I recommend Wolf of Wall Street to everybody. It's just so fucking long. And I wish it.
It's excessive. It's about a guy who went to extremes.
I know.
And it's excessive.
I
think Scorsese's too in love with his own. He can't clip stuff.
All of these guys, and this is going to be a theme for the whole list. All these guys that are these directors who've had hits, they all have Final Cut, and it's kind of ruining movies in a way. It's kind of making everything a chore to watch, because it's a chore to chop out 3 hours of your day and go see Wolf of Wall Street. You know, I walked in, it was daylight. I walked out, it was the fucking middle of the night. It was, you know, it gets to be a chore, and we're, you know, 30 minutes less of this would have made it a better movie, but it's still great. It's that Goodfellas casino style of Scorsese. Lots of rock and roll.
The other problem with Scorsese is, again, Casino would be the best movie you ever saw, but he already made
Goodfellas.
Goodfellas. He'd already made Goodfellas.
Well, Mean Streets, Goodfellas kind of took Mean Streets to another level, then Casino kind of took to Goodfellas. Yeah.
Raging Bull's still the best movie he ever made.
Okay.
But Goodfellas is pretty much.
Yeah, I think Goodfellas is the best.
The second best, you could say the best.
But it
he kind of hit a career.
There's
peak.
A style of people, and we've seen David O. Russell do that, and we saw things like Boogie Nights with Paul Thomas Anderson, where they take that sort of Goodfellas style and they make a movie out of it. Nobody does it as good as Scorsese, and this is him almost at his very best.
It is wildly, it's really good. Wildly entertaining.
Yeah.
You will be just on the edge of your seat, riveted, laughing hysterically.
Yeah.
For about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It's a 3-hour movie. And that's my problem.
It's at the end of it's not bad. It's interesting.
It's in no way bad. It had been split into two movies.
Right. This could have been great on like
the Rise and Fall
HBO to
of
watch
the
this
Wolf.
Over two nights or three nights or something, you know? But it's a great movie. Go see it. Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to win the Oscar for some of the reasons we mentioned, but it's still great and I loved it. So that's my number 10 movie.
That was my number 7.
Okay, so I'm gonna
actually, since I had my honorable mentions list, I didn't actually number. I did leave one off that I wanted to say.
Well,
speaking of McConaughey, did you have this on your list?
Well, I might. Why don't you say it?
All right, Dallas Buyers Club.
Okay. Yeah, that's my number 5 movie.
Okay, all right.
Again, you can just stick to the script. We'll be good.
No, I'm just saying.
Well, you can do your honorable mentions.
I know. I'm saying my 15 got pulled from my honorable mention list, which I didn't actually have numbered. And I had more than 5.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
But then I'm still going to do Margaret. Let's talk about Dallas Buyers Club. Go ahead, Corey.
Okay, you're going to get to it.
I'll get to it. I'm going to get to it. It was my number 5.
Well, we're going to have crossovers here.
Okay, but we're out of order now. But it's okay. Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, I'm just Matthew McConaughey. He's better than the movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, it actually ties in because it's more of a crime movie. It's more like Wolf of Wall Street than I would have ever imagined.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised by it when I saw it.
Well, it's very similar, and it's a guy who makes his own rules.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although he's doing it for good purposes.
Yeah,
it's about a gambling, drinking, womanizing, bigoted redneck.
Yeah, good old boy.
Yeah, in Dallas, who's kind of living by the seat of his. He's an electrical. He's like an engineer, right? He's like an electrician.
He's an electrician. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like an electrical engineer,
and he works in like oil rigs and shit.
Right.
Oil wells.
But kind of a guy who's always owing poker debts, and he's up
he's riding bulls, betting on
rodeo and crap.
And stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So living on the edge, and apparently he's the one heterosexual who got AIDS from heterosexual sex.
I looked up, because I read the Wikipedia on it, and they claim that scene, because there's like a flashback of him where he's got
short hair.
It's somebody who had just shot up.
Okay, so
he
has
sex with
drugs.
Somebody, some woman.
They're showing him having sex with a woman.
I couldn't tell. It looked like a woman. I go, is that a guy? Are they in a bathroom? I couldn't tell, but apparently it was a woman who was doing drugs. They didn't really make that perfectly clear, but.
But McConaughey is phenomenal.
Yeah, and
he's really great.
It is like the Goodfellas. It's the guy who comes from nothing and becomes a kingpin.
Yeah.
But he becomes a kingpin in the world of like AIDS drugs that are experimental.
Right.
And it's all like he's fighting the FDA every minute. And
They tell him he's got like 2 months to live.
Uh-huh.
And he says, screw that.
Yeah.
And finds another alternative. And he goes down to Mexico.
Yeah.
Starts importing all the things that ended up becoming popular AIDS treatments later on, but a lot of supplements and vitamins and natural roots and protease inhibitors.
Peptide T, whatever that is.
All the stuff that eventually became part of the common sense, but at that time they were the mainstream medical community was still trying interferon. What was it?
Interferon was the thing. He had to go to Japan to get interferon. Yeah. It's a great movie. We're ruining it because really, okay. This movie surprised me because I didn't know much about it and I didn't realize it was going to be this like
right.
Kind of drug dealer movie. That and then Jared Leto's dressed as a woman and he's running around listening to Mark Ballin.
It's a very showy. I'll tell you what, McConaughey to me was really awesome.
Yeah.
And inhabited the part and he did the whole thing where he lost 30 pounds. Leto was a little more showy to me.
Yeah, Leto's good, but
he's good, but he's winning the.
He looks good as a woman.
He does look good as a woman. He's a very pretty woman.
Pretty man.
Jennifer Garner, speaking of pretty women,
yeah.
Her character's kind of a nothing.
Well, it's... She's... apparently, she didn't really exist. Jared Leto's character didn't really exist, because this is a true story.
Composites.
But she's a composite of the doctors that... Yeah. Some doctors actually supported him in his...
Right.
In his ability to try to get drugs to these AIDS patients. So, yeah. It's a great movie. I was surprised. I had no... I thought it was just going to be a guy who gets AIDS and falls in love with Jared Leto, and it's not at all what it is.
It's not...
It's not at all...
And it's not a traditional...
I thought it was going to be like Torch Song Trilogy or something, and it's really more of a crime movie.
It's a love story.
Yeah, it
but
is.
Not
but
in it's, a,
yeah,
it's not it's, a... It's not an actual romantic love story.
Right.
It's a love story between people who develop an affection.
It's really about a guy who becomes an outlaw to save his own life, and
yeah.
And it's really great. I was shocked by how good.
Well,
it
he
was,
just so takes his outlaw great. Spirit and puts it yeah. in a different direction.
Okay,
but yeah,
that was my five, and
right.
I loved it. So anyway, well, let you.
Well,
do
then
your,
you dug it. Right.
Now you got to give me a 10.
My number 10. I don't know if you saw this or what you thought about it, but. And I got in a troll fight with a guy on the on Facebook, a comic from New York.
Uh-oh.
About Philomena.
Philomena. Go ahead.
His point was, it looks like an old pussy fart. I mean, you know, he basically...
Did the guy see the movie,
no,
or he's just
no.
complaining? Okay. Let me tell you something.
He said it looked boring.
Okay.
I didn't see it.
When the Oscar nominations came out,
mm-hmm.
that morning,
yeah.
I decided I needed to see some movies.
Sure.
And I looked at that old pussy fart Philomena,
yeah.
And I went like, I'll give it. It's $5 at the main at 1 o'clock.
Sure.
I went in. It's my number four movie of the year.
There
I
you
loved
go.
It.
It's a great
it's fucking
movie.
Great.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Philomena's really good. Yeah. It's
a fantastic movie.
I almost made it my number one. I actually thought about like making it. But
I'm looking now and I think 10's pretty low for me.
Yeah, I think it is low.
But,
I think that's a great. And it's funny because no one saw it.
No.
And if you watch a trailer, because that's another one of those movies where we shouldn't say too much about it, because
mm-hmm.
I think that the drama is a mystery.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of, you know, where is this going to go?
It's
And you know, you can't put that in a trailer.
No.
I don't think. And if you did, it would ruin it. And I knew almost nothing about it. I knew it was Steve Coogan and Judi Dench on a road trip. That's all I knew.
It also plays out in a very, like a detective story.
It's a detective story. Yeah, absolutely.
Steve Coogan is a journalist who's been, he's disgraced because he was working for Tony Blair and now he's been fired.
He had a government job and he's kind of kicked out.
And he's kicking around not knowing what to do. And someone comes to him with the story of a woman whose child was given up for adoption. Mm-hmm. And she always wanted to know what happened to the child. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
And Judi Dench is,
Judi Dench, it's the
quest, they go and look
for what happened to her
what
kid.
What happened to her kid.
Who would be 50 years old now.
And it's about her faith, it's about the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
It's about a lot of things.
There's a lot of political stuff, and I don't want to get into the issues, but there's a lot of stuff.
What's amazing about the movie is it's about these two people who kind of get thrown into a situation. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to do this story.
He doesn't.
But he then realizes there's a story there.
Yeah.
And it's going to be good for him. And then it becomes about, much like Dallas Buyers Club, it's about two people who don't really ever think they're going to relate to each other coming together and sharing each other's vision or learning from each other.
Yeah.
Which I know is this Corey and Joel talking?
Yeah, I know.
We're about hugging and learning.
Come here and blow me.
But
come
it's
here,
funny. It's
here.
Also really funny.
And it's funny. And it's funny. There's a lot of humor in it.
She's very blunt and like
Judi Dench
just says outrageous things.
Judi Dench is what you expect, but she's very, very good. It's not the queen. She's playing a middle class or a lower middle class person in England. It's not like she's the queen. Coogan is funny and you know, he's a lot like he was in 24 Hour Party People, which I know was based on Tony Wilson, but he sort of has that feel where he's a little bit of an outlaw.
A little
he's
dry,
a free thinker.
Yeah.
And, you know, Coogan's been in some of the worst movies I've ever seen, like Hamlet 2 and The Trip. And I know you like The Trip.
I love The Trip.
But I thought this was going to be The Trip with Judi Dench, and I went like, oh, fucking God, no. But it really is.
I'm with you that Hamlet 2 is not
Hamlet
that
2
good.
Is garbage. This is one of the best movies of the year. I know you're going like, I don't want to see this because it's about an old lady.
I know, it's a hard
but
sell.
You really should see it. It's great. You'll love it. Your girlfriend will like it. Your parents will like
not,
it.
By the way, Steve Coogan wrote it.
Yeah.
And it is not in any way sappy.
Right, yeah.
People look at this and probably think it's like
you're going to cry.
Trip to Bountiful
and
or some
it's not.
Shit.
No, it's not.
It's not at all.
It's really
good. It's hard-hitting.
It is.
It has a political edge.
You might cry, but
it's funny.
You'll love it,
and it's
too.
Moving.
Yeah, it is.
It's a great movie.
It really was.
10 is too low. I probably
should have had I sat there with the old people at the Main and watched this, and I went like, why am I sitting here? And God damn it, if I wasn't surprised. And I really think, because Stephen Frears directed this, but it really feels like this was a Coogan project from the beginning, because he wrote it.
Stephen Frears is a guy who's about half and he's like about a, he's about a, if he was in baseball, he'd be about a 270 hitter.
Right. He's, well, he's on the, like the down end of his career too. He's been on,
but
you know,
he makes something really good.
Yeah. He's got the chops, you know.
My Beautiful Laundrette, the Grifters.
And Crying Game.
Crying Game.
Yeah, so he,
was it
I think it was Crying Game.
Okay.
Yeah.
High Fidelity.
Yeah.
He's got some really good movies, and then he's got some ones that are kind of crap.
Yeah, but he's...
Liam is not a good
but
movie.
But he knows how to make a good movie, and he had good stuff to work with here. There is a book that this is based on that the journalist eventually
Martin
wrote.
Sixsmith, yeah.
And it's really great, so go see Philomena.
All right, I'm glad you liked that one, Joel. I'm surprised. I'm glad.
Well, you know what? I decided I was so... Like, I had seen 7 of, like, the 9 nominated movies, and I was like, well, why don't I just see them all? I looked. It was at the Main is 5 minutes from my fucking
house.
Sure. Why not go see that? It was $5.
It was a matinee, sure.
It was a matinee. There was a giant snowstorm outside, but I still went. All right, let's go to my number 9.
Oh, God.
Now, this is a documentary. This is Oscar-nominated for Best Documentary. It's called The Act of Killing.
Okay.
And you can see this on Netflix right now. Mm-hmm. They just added it, like, last week. And it's about... I don't even know how this director ended up. There's a lot of backstory to how this movie got made. But basically, he goes to Indonesia, and in the 50s in Indonesia... there was a coup. The government, whoever the government took over, they were anti-communist, and they decided that they would create a kill list, like a hit list of people that they wanted to kill. It would be communists and other people that they didn't like. But the government, knowing that this would look bad to the international community, the government decided that they wouldn't do the killings themselves. They would hire like local gangsters and thugs. So they found a bunch of guys who were, and the movie describes this, they were movie theater thugs. This is what tough guys were talking about.
Okay.
They would hang outside the movie house, and, you know, they would, like, wheel and deal and, like, scalp tickets, I guess they say. So these guys were real, like, wannabe tough guys, and they hired the newspaper editor to decide who would die, and then they would build these houses where they would go and kill. They would, like, strangle these people. And they murder him in a bunch of different ways. But when he goes back and he finds all these guys who are all like 7 years old now, and he goes, can you show me how you executed these people? And he says, I'm going to give you a camera crew, and I want you guys to make a movie of how you did this genocide against the communists. So they basically have all these old Indonesian guys and all their flunkies, who there's like this revolutionary troop of young people. And they give them camera equipment, and they recreate their murders. But they're done in a way that's like, it's like the Keystone Cops. It's a bunch of old Indonesian guys talking, like admitting to all of the most vile acts ever committed by humanity, but doing it in a way where like they, it's like guys who can't make a movie. It's like, remember American Movie, where it's a bunch of morons who can't make a movie? That's what this is, but it's about genocide. It's a bizarre documentary.
Wow.
And it's fascinating. And it's like, if you watch this in a theater, now I saw this at home. If you watch this in a theater, the audience is probably laughing uproariously.
If there's an audience.
But that's the thing. But this movie, I heard about this movie for 6 months before I saw it because I couldn't find a way to see it. And I ended up getting a home video cut that was like 3 hours. And it turns out the one on Netflix is a more reasonable 2 hours, so the 3-hour one is definitely overkill. But it's amazing that these guys are admitting their crimes. Yeah. It's hard to describe because it's really not like any other documentary you'll ever see. And you almost kind of go like, you know, these guys are – it's a documentary about guys making a movie about what assholes they are. And the joke is on them because I guess they're all pissed off now at this documentary. Because
they were exposed.
Because they were exposed for looking. And Indonesia, by the way, Indonesia looks like the worst place on fucking earth if you see this movie too. Where you're like, how are these guys able to get away with it? And that government, because I believe it's the same government that's still in power in Indonesia that took it over in the 50s, and they just look like complete assholes, and the whole thing is just scary and weird, and yet it's funny because, you know, the guys are like, you know, the lead guy who was one of the murderers, I forget his name, but, you know, you'll know he's, like, he puts himself, like, he makes himself a murder victim at times, and you see guys trying to, like, do, like you know, like Tom Savini, you know, blood effects.
Special effects.
On an Indonesian budget where guys who've never done it before, and it's just, it's comical, and yet it's completely disgusting at the same time, and it's a really weird, fucking scary movie, man. But it's amazing. So I think it's
you know, I did not.
I think it's going to win.
I did not see this film.
It's probably
all the other critics told me it was good, and I just
never got to it. It's on Netflix now, so you can see it. It's
this
just
was
got
kind
added.
Of you know what? Not as good a year for documentaries.
Well, you know, I've got
last year they were great. There was Queen of Versailles, The Imposter. There were great documentaries.
I've got a whole bunch of. Honorable mention documentaries.
Yeah,
but I've only got two on my actual list, and this is why
this got nominated.
I think it's nominated. I think it's going to win.
The other hot name in documentaries that I saw, which was good, that did not get nominated, was Blackfish.
Yeah, Blackfish I had on my other one, and
but it did not get.
It was in the running, and I didn't like Blackfish that much, but
yeah,
because I thought it was good, but it's
I think
also,
The Cove was better.
I didn't see
in a similar theme.
The thing about Blackfish was that it was the thing about Blackfish that a lot of people might realize, it's like it's the reason you don't keep the whales in captivity is because they're killing people.
Right.
That's the point of that. It's not like, oh, we got to save the whales. I mean, there's that too, but they're actually telling you how bad the fish is. But anyway, the act of killing is definitely worth a watch. Again, this is going to be no fun to watch with your girlfriend or wife or whatever, but you really should see it because it's really not. It's unlike anything you'll ever see. And it's pretty amazing, and you're gonna the lead guy, the lead, you know, murderer, you're gonna hate his fucking guts. He really is just, I mean, these are fat guys with, these are fat, you know, brown people with dark, you know, with bad teeth and gray hair who
but
are
enough
just
about the comedy
gang,
zone.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, the act of I think he's gonna win the Oscar. I'll get into the
inside
other
joke.
Docs, but it was my number 9 movie, and it's great. All so right. Go see The Act of Killing, Corey. You'll like it.
We might have an argument here. Or
you got a 9. Give me a 9.
My number 9, Don John.
Didn't see it.
Did not see Don John.
So it's all you.
Don John is Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who would seem to be an unlikely candidate to play a Guido.
Well,
he's versatile. He is versatile. And you know what? He pulled it off. I really thought, no way.
Yeah.
He's playing like a real, you know, Jersey Shore kind of... gym tan laundry kind of self-obsessed guy, and his whole thing is that you know, he works out, goes to the club, picks up broads,
yeah,
but he prefers porn.
Okay.
Because the real women won't let you do all the stuff that you can do in porn.
Oh.
And the porn is where he's actually happy.
Okay.
Because he can just go into the world of porn, doesn't have to worry about, is he on her hair, is she gonna tell his friends, or are her friends going to?
So he's a guy who doesn't respect the feelings of women. Basically.
He does not. He's a real gigolo. And then he meets Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah,
and she outmaneuvers. She's
really?
More. She's smarter and more powerful than him.
She won't let him jizz up her nose. That's,
no. And she makes him wait. but it's, you know what?
Right.
She's really.
He
funny.
Goes through a journey. She teaches. She makes him a better man.
Yeah, but it doesn't turn out.
It's not. It doesn't turn out as.
It's not as simple as that. It goes in different directions, and I don't want to give away too much, but it's not just a plain cut, you know. They both get different. These people run into each other, and it changes both of their attitudes, and then there's a couple other characters.
It's unconventional is what
it's
you're saying.
It's funny. It's really funny and well done and sharp and moves quick, and Tony Danza plays his dad.
And okay.
It's really funny. You're like, wow, hey, good for Tony Danza to actually be in a part. In some ways, it's a little bit like Silver Linings Playbook, and it's an overdrawn kind of a family.
Right.
But I thought it was really well done and sharp and entertaining.
Okay.
So
it talks
about sex politics between men and women.
Oh.
So if you're going to take your aforementioned wife or girlfriend.
Yeah. You can talk about it after. You can have
you'll have a big argument about it afterwards.
You have a big argument about it.
I think it's pretty good, though.
Okay. I didn't see it. Maybe I'll check it out. It is available, just so I'd like to tell people this. You can rent this digitally through iTunes, Amazon, or Vudu, is what it looks like now. So that's, you get pay-per-view on your cable. That's you.
We
see
go.
Don John at this point. All right, that's Corey's number 9. My number, I guess I'm up to my number 8 now. And this, I thought, was the best documentary of the year, and it's not nominated for an Academy Award documentary. Mm-hmm. And maybe because it was on Showtime, and it's a movie I've talked about a lot on this show. It's called Richard Pryor, Omit the Logic.
Oh.
Just great. And I almost forgot about this when I was putting this list together, and then somebody brought that up. I don't know if it was on Facebook or somewhere on TV, and I went like, that is a great documentary about Richard Pryor. And there's been other Richard Pryor documentaries that people have done over the years.
Now, but which one of his ex-wives put this one?
I think it was the last one, and she really was like the executive producer. But
yeah.
There's nothing glossed over. They talk about all of his arrests, his drug problems. You know, when Richard Pryor set himself on fire, because that's been a debate about what really happened.
Yeah.
The guy that was with him at the time when he did it, it's all, you know, in there. And it's really great. It's really a portrait of one of the great artists of our times, Richard Pryor. And, you know, there could have been more clips of him being funny. I think that's one thing that maybe this lacked. But as far as just a portrait of somebody and, you know, a really great man, it's fantastic. And if you love comedy and you love Richard Pryor, you can't not love this movie.
Well,
it's amazing.
You know, sounds kind of like a sad story, and it is.
It is a sad story, but it's not, you know, because they show him coming back from MS, and when he would get a, you know, he'd be going on stage in a wheelchair and stuff like that, and there's all of that, and
on the set of Superman 3,
yeah,
where he and Christopher Reeve were hanging out. No.
Well, no, but there's stuff like, you know, on what was the movie that Harlem Nights.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Eddie, that's sort of where Eddie passed Richard as far as being a star, or Eddie had already sort of passed him.
And he had,
there was a torch passing sort of
Richard
a movie.
Richard Pryor and Red Fox in the movie, kind of as a tribute.
Right. So, but Richard's on the set, and, you know, he wasn't diagnosed with MS at this point. And Richard Pryor he couldn't use his hand very well. Mm-hmm. So he would keep a cigarette lighter in his hand. And his assistant is interviewed in this, and he goes, we're on the set of Harlem Nights, and I'm like, Richard, you know, you can't have your lighter in the scene. The cigarette lighters didn't exist back with this movie set in the past. You can't have a cigarette lighter in his hand. Mm-hmm. And that's when he found out he wasn't using his hand very well. And it's just sad. It breaks your heart because the guy was so great. And it's just a great documentary. I mean, if you want to, I mean, I know it sounds sad and stuff, but if you loved Richard Pryor.
Yeah, you've really painted a.
Yeah, no, well, you know, it's great. Well, all of that stuff, I feel like sometimes that stuff gets whitewashed. His arrests and, you know, there's wife-beating stories and stuff. And
is Paul Mooney in it?
Of course Paul Mooney's in
good,
it. Why is Paul Mooney not being in it?
I'm just asking because if it's legit, Paul Mooney will be
Paul Mooney's in it. And, you know, all these guys, like the guy, it was like his security guy that was with him when he set himself on fire who really didn't do a lot of interviews is in this. Yeah. And, you know, the ex-wife that, you know, did this, I don't even know that she's even interviewed in it.
Jennifer?
Yeah, I'm not even sure that she's interviewed in it, but it's a lot of really crazy, you know.
I know a lot of the Pryor stuff.
When Pryor was on coke, he was crazy, and that's funny. You know, it's funny to hear those stories. And then it's sad to what happened to him, because he really, as much as, like, he was on a downturn, you know, he could be around now, like a Bill Murray, and be like some actor that would be.
How old would he be? 70?
He might be 70 now or something. Yeah. But, you know, there's guys that, you know, old comics who put, you know, Scorsese will put Alan King and stuff. And, you know, he could be around being in some of these movies now.
Well,
you know, and it's sad that he died, you know, not that he was a guy. It's the irony,
Free
I guess.
Freemason will do that.
It's a guy that, you know, you sort of thought was going to burn out and die young. And then he did, but not for the reasons people thought, you know. So it's great. It was on Showtime, so I would guess you go to Showtime to see this now. I'm not sure if it's streaming anywhere. I could look.
Well,
it
see
up,
that
but,
to me, that's not a theatrical release, so I wouldn't. Yeah,
but it was when people make these movies, they're made independently, and then Showtime buys them. So I'm not considering this. Like, it's not like a Showtime television show. It's a movie.
All right,
it just
I got you. All
was
right.
distributed by Showtime. So that
all right, my number eight in a very different vein, and again featuring a guy we've talked about now twice.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey in Mud, which came out earlier in the year, and I think it got swamped a little bit.
Yeah, I never got a chance to see Mud.
Pun intended.
Yeah.
But Mud is really good. It's and not to give too much away about this one either. I don't want to spoil.
Okay.
It's about these two kids who live on the river, like in a houseboat, basically. Or they not together, but they both live in this, you know, little kind of river fishing community.
Yeah.
And they find McConaughey is like a drifter who's living on this island, secretly living on this island by himself, in the middle of the lake or the river. It's in the Mississippi River in Arkansas. And he's this, like, you don't know if you can trust this guy or what, you know, it's kind of like it has a Tom Sawyer-ish feel to
okay.
it. Just the, but, and that's not going to sound good when right, I describe it like that. But McConaughey's terrific.
But it gets good.
Yeah, and he's you find out why he's living out on that island yeah. and what's going on.
Yeah, you can't, I know what you mean. You can't give it away because right. it's sort of, yeah.
But there's a lot of great people in it. You know, Joe Don Baker is in
okay.
it.
Okay.
You know, as he's pretty great. Reese Witherspoon, one of the best performances she's
oh,
given in,
Reese Witherspoon.
In forever, though.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but, she's hardly in show business.
I know, but she's yeah. really, really good in yeah. this. And, yeah. And again, Sarah Paulson, from who was in 12 Years a Slave, it's yeah. the mom. She's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, it takes its time. It's kind of a little slow moving, but it really engages you in the story. Kind of 70s style filmmaking where it's, you know, it takes a more leisurely pace, but it's a really involving movie. And get drawn into the story right. of this guy, what mysteries he's got, why he's out on this island, and what he's there to do. He's come back to town.
Yeah.
And he's hiding out on this island. So anyway, really great movie made by the guy who did Take Shelter.
Okay. I saw Take Shelter. That was yeah. that Take Shelter had its moments.
Yeah.
I didn't love all of Take Shelter, but it was interesting. It was well made.
It's compelling.
And I see what
Michael
you mean.
Michael Shannon's in it
right.
too.
Right. And I see what you mean by 70s style, cuz Take Shelter felt like it could have been like you know, one of those like
Monty Hellman made it or something.
Yeah, like yeah. one of those BBS guys, like, you know,
Burt Rafelson.
Bob Rafelson.
Bob Rafelson.
It could. It
Bert
seems
Schneider
like
and Bob Rafelson. Yeah.
So anyway, all right, my Mud. I'll check that out.
Mud right. is cool. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna get to my seven, and I think we're gonna really start overlapping soon. But
okay, good.
My number seven movie, and again, this is one that you don't want to say too much about because it ruins it. But you can tell the setup of it anyway, yeah. and it's called Nebraska. By Alexander
That's
Payne.
That's my number six.
Well, there you go. Corey's number six
All
is
right,
Nebraska.
There you go.
And, you know, Alexander Payne is a guy. The thing about him, and I've loved almost every, maybe there's one I didn't see, but every one I've seen I've loved,
sure.
is he just makes movies where I'm just talking about regular people.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And they feel like regular people.
Right.
And it doesn't feel showy. And it doesn't feel like this is a movie and everyone's acting for the camera.
Yeah.
It sometimes just feels like he just put a camera in somebody's living room, and it happened in front of it. And he's really the expert at this. And this story is about a guy who, you know, it's about an old man who thinks he won the lottery, and he's living in Billings, Montana, and he decides to leave his house and walk to Lincoln, Nebraska. Now,
yeah.
of course, he doesn't get that far, and, you know, he's picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then his son, who is, what's the name of the?
Will Forte.
Will Forte from SNL, who, this is how great, let me tell you how great Alexander Payne is. Let
yeah.
me suck his nuts real good
yeah,
for me
yeah.
here. He probably had this movie. Now, I heard that Bryan Cranston wanted to play the son.
Okay.
And he must have went like, you know, I'm so fucking good. I'm going to take MacGruber and put him in this. That's
Cranston,
how good Alexander Payne is.
Cranston might be a little
He
old.
Might be a little too old. But that, apparently, like, you know, he's so good. He took a guy that you wouldn't take seriously for 2 minutes in a drama. And he's fucking great in it.
Will Forte's terrific.
He's great in it. That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
But it's
you're telling me MacGruber
right, that's
was
what
not
I mean.
Your first pick?
Like, he was probably like, you know, it's too easy to put a good actor in this role. Let's get the worst guy on SNL and put him in this.
I could have seen a few actors that could have played that
right.
part.
Right, yeah.
There
was there's a list of guys you can find who
right,
like,
right,
wanted
right.
it.
Like
you know.
Jason Bateman or somebody.
Yeah, but you could have seen
but Will Forte was
like,
really
good. You
could
have seen good. Ryan Gosling do it or something
sure.
even. You know. But it's great. Bruce Dern, of course, is the old man.
You know what? I do think, actually, Will Forte was good for the reason that if you're like an improv comic,
yeah.
it's kind of about listening.
Yeah.
And Forte does a great job
he
of
he listens
of
and
like
reacts to his, yeah.
reactive
Bruce
acting.
Dern is sort of leading, and he's sort of following behind. But anyway, it ends up in their whole
Bob Odenkirk plays the other
yeah,
son,
yeah.
and he's terrific in
yeah,
that
and
too.
Yeah, and I don't want to give away too much, because again, this is a movie that you know, is one of those things where mm-hmm. it has sort of twists and turns. It turns into a road. It's sort of like Philomena in that they go on a road trip, and there's things that happen, and I don't want to ruin all that. But one thing about this movie, too, that's great, and I want to just give Alexander Payne all credit, is, and unlike a lot of movies, this movie is really about the journey more than the destination.
Sure.
Because it does have a reveal at the end with
yeah,
this, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
he's trying to figure out, could he, you know, everyone's like, you didn't win the lottery, and you sort of go, but, you know, this movie doesn't give you what would be the cheap Hollywood ending.
No.
Because it's not about that. It's about the relationship between these characters, and it's not about making you feel good at the end, you know, and doing some
well,
sort of cheap Hollywood ending. And it's shot in black and white,
right.
and it really looks beautiful, and just like there's just the two guys who are like cousins of them that they run into.
Oh, it's
at
great.
One point. Those guys
their
were
family,
amazing.
Their family.
Oh, it's so good.
There's a great scene where they all go and they, and I've seen this situation play out. I've been in There's a side of my family just reminded me of.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like, I've got relatives that live in Imlay City.
Yeah, yeah.
Which they're like, you know, all farm people.
Right.
And we'd go there as a kid to these reunions, and I hated it. But, like, they go in, and there's all his brothers are sitting in there watching football in, like, silence.
And you got to,
And they're like, you still driving that Ford?
Right.
Like, that's as much of a...
Yeah, I know.
That's as much of a conversation that you get to.
I dated a girl who really, it reminded me a lot of her family. I would go to family things, and there'd be two fat cousins sitting there who I couldn't relate to at all.
What kind of annoyed me was that there were certain kind of New York-y critics that thought this was... Hicksploitation, or he was making fun of. I'm like, one,
they've never been to the sticks.
Never been to Montana, asshole.
Those guys haven't been above 14th Street. Yeah, New York assholes. Yeah, fuck those guys. Yeah.
You went to Hoboken once. That was your great Western adventure.
You went out to Long Island somewhere.
Yeah. Christ, I had to go to Philadelphia. It was terrible. You just shut up. Just shut up.
It was up in Tarrytown. You couldn't believe it.
Oh, yeah, Tarrytown. I mean,
or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Had to go to Schenectady.
Yeah.
Look, the thing is, you know, Alexander Payne's from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the guy knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And it didn't feel... It's a little exaggerated and a little... It's because it's funny.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was...
Right. It's a comedy that... You know, and it is a comedy. I mean, it's a drama. It's a comedy.
I think it's another one, though. Unfortunately, people are going to go... Let's about an old
It looks
guy.
Boring. Yeah, I know. And that's
Everybody I know who's seen it loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's lyrical.
Yeah.
The black and white is gorgeous, stunningly photographed.
Well,
it feels like it's about more than just a comedy.
Right, and you know, if you like Sideways or what was the Descendants? I mean, I think it's better than the Descendants.
Yeah.
I might have liked Sideways more, a little more than this, but I thought it was better than Descendants, and that's saying a lot, and you know, again, this was a thing. I sat at the to see this movie
with 100-year-old people, right?
It was playing. Now it's playing in like maybe 3 theaters in Metro Detroit, but none of them. The only one close to me is the Birmingham 8. It's playing once a day at the like 3:30, I go, no one's going to be at this. Every fucking fossil in Birmingham got out of their house on the same day I did, and you know the Birmingham 8, they have theaters that are like 40 seats.
They're small.
Imagine this movie at 3:30 in the afternoon, the one showing all day at this theater.
Yeah.
And 35 of the 40 seats being full.
They have an upstairs there, and there's two small theaters.
And that's where it was. And it was all these old people and me sitting there. And I'm like, you know, this movie. And I'm like going, well, this is the movie's getting that good buzz to where, you know, it really should be. And maybe it will go wider.
I really thought earlier.
The black and white, I think, holds it back from going wider. And that's too bad. Because apparently, you know, they did shoot this digitally in color.
Right.
And then they made it black and white in post. So.
Sure.
And Alexander Payne was like, well, I never want this ever shown in color.
Right.
Like, he gave an interview where he was like, don't fucking show this in color.
Well, they shouldn't.
Yeah,
but
they shouldn't.
They could.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in seeing it in color.
No, but it the effectiveness of, like, Bruce Dern's white hair and stuff in the black and white, and Stacey Keach is sort of his rival. It's great.
It's gorgeously filmed. Stacey Keach is fantastic.
Yeah, Stacey Keach is great.
I thought Bruce Dern earlier, if you asked me in October, I would have said Bruce Dern was going to be the Oscar winner.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, McConaughey. Not unfortunately, because it's a great
performance. He's great in Dallas Buyers Club. Yeah.
But I think McConaughey can't be beat because, one, he's playing a gay.
Yeah, yeah.
He's playing a Mo.
Well, he's actually not playing a gay, but he's playing
AIDS,
a man with AIDS.
It's a story about AIDS.
Yeah, right.
And he's
a
gay sympathizer.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an LGBT ally.
Well, he's a hero to the gays.
Right. Right. So I think the homosexual community in Hollywood.
He's going to rival.
Are you aware of that? Have you heard
that? And Bruce Dern, you know, you can't give every old guy, because there's always one old actor
they
drag out, like Robert Forster.
Who won the Oscar, like, last year or the year before? It was Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
There's always an old guy.
Was that Beginners, the name of that movie? It was a good movie, too.
Which was great.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Well, I thought Robert Redford might have had a shot too,
because
he's Robert Redford,
but
who's won for directing and not acting.
The woman who is his wife,
June Squibb.
June Squibb is funny. I mean, she gets all the great
lines. She got nominated,
and she's nominated, and she could win. I don't know.
Well, you know what? You're right.
Jennifer Lawrence.
There's usually some little girl or old lady that they nominate.
Yeah.
I'm glad there's no little girl this year
because
that was ridiculous with Kumanjane Wallace.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, that's a great movie, Nebraska. Like, I think we both feel the same way about
Wolf
it.
Wolf of Wall Street was my 7, Nebraska was my 6.
Okay, let me just write down Wolf of Wall Street, and then I guess I can give a 6. Is that the way it's going to work? Because you already got my 5, and...
yeah, we're covering each other's territory.
Well, here's my 6, and I don't know if this made yours, but I think this is the best... I want to call this the best pure comedy of the year, although I guess it's got other elements in it too. But The World's End.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would have been maybe just...
Just out of your top?
17 or so.
Okay,
yeah.
World's End is fucking great. And it's Edgar Wright teaming up once again with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah.
If you saw Hot Fuzz, if you saw the other one, Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
If you'd like Spaced, this is right up your alley. It is the one thing that this movie did great because, again, I didn't see a lot of spoilers for this, so I didn't know, like, you know that the world is sort of coming to an end, but these guys are on a bar crawl. It's basically guys from high school reunite. I guess it's supposed to be 20 years later, although I found that the actors' ages didn't quite line up with neither the soundtrack they were trying to portray as
being or each other.
Or each other, yeah. So I thought these are like 50-year-old guys playing 40-year-old guys, I think, for the most part. But still, they try to do this pub crawl where they do all the pubs in this little village where they all grew up in. And it's funny because the movie has all this like backstory. And they're constantly telling these stories about what happened when they were in high school.
Right.
And it's just kind of going like, what is... And you're watching
it's
this...
Well, it's a very intimate...
And in the beginning...
It's a fully realized world.
And in the beginning, you're just going, what's the point of all these stories? Mm-hmm. And like every single little bit of backstory all plays out. Like every... There's not a wasted line of dialogue in this, in the setup.
Yeah.
It all plays out by the end, and it's great. And if you've seen the end, you know that there is a supernatural element. I don't want to ruin anything. But something happens.
Well,
I mean, the trailers gave away a lot, and I'm
glad really
I
like
didn't see
Edgar
him.
Wright.
Yeah.
And right. I really like those guys, Nick Frost, Simon Pegg.
Right.
I actually thought this one was really the. In Shaun of the Dead, it doesn't take too long for the supernatural element to show up. This one, it does take a while.
Well, it's.
And it kind of. You could have split the movie into two halves,
but
I liked the first half better. I actually could have just watched...
You wanted to watch those guys just go on a pub crawl.
I could have just watched those guys go on a pub crawl.
Well, that's the thing. That's what's great about it,
and
though.
And fight with each other.
Right.
And then when they threw the supernatural stuff in, it was interesting.
It could have
worked as its own movie.
Well,
But why it didn't make my top
But
list.
It's a lot like Hot Fuzz, and you know how Hot Fuzz was like...
Simon, that's kind of a slow
I'm a straight-laced cop, and, and it's just a by-the-book thing, and they're in a small town, and then it turns into fucking crazy shootouts.
They also go,
Hot
Fuzz is a kind of the same in that they're going back to their old town.
Yeah. Well, I like this better than Hot Fuzz. I would like Shaun of the Dead a little bit more than this, but it's still one of the great movies. I mean, the soundtrack on this is, like, everything I loved. Like, every song that came on the soundtrack, because a lot of it is, like, it's Simon Pegg's personal cassette for their drinking. And, like, every song on there is something I own and fucking love from, Blur, The Stone Roses, Primal Scream.
The main song
is Loaded by Primal Scream, and that's one of my all-time favorite albums, Screamadelica. All just pulp, all these great Britpop stuff.
What was the movie last year with Charlize Theron and Patton Oswalt?
Oh, yeah. What was the name of that?
That had a great soundtrack, too, because they had, like, Teenage Fan Club.
Teenage Fan Club was...
I like when they get that, because we're
although that was, like, the high school prom queen would not be listening to Teenage Fan Club in 1991.
No.
She wouldn't have. I mean, okay, but that, aside from that...
That was a little
off. That was a little far-fetched.
But I like the music.
The music, in this was great.
I'll tell you, the music is great in American Hustle, and it's great in... Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Because, like, Jared Leto listens to T-Rex.
Yeah, that's all great,
and he listens to, like, Take This Job and Shove It.
Shit-kicker music. So, The World's End, though, you can rent this now, and it's great, and you should watch it. And my girlfriend loved it, or the girl I was with anyway, she loved it. And it was a great movie. So The World's End, go see it. Again, it's a slow build on this one. But it all pays off.
But I'm telling you, I could have just watched...
Every little thing... Exactly.
I could have just watched those guys...
Well, that's the trip.
Because it's about...
That's the trip.
It is the trip.
That's the trip. Guys sitting around bullshit in pubs,
which I loved.
Which I didn't love. But
it's about, like, Simon Pegg's character can't grow up.
Yeah.
He's the guy who's still stuck doing
it. The other guys are successful business guys, and he's still, kind of a washed-up slob. But it's great.
It's kind of like a documentary about my
life. How great is Nick Frost in this? Because Nick Frost, you expect to be the wild man, and instead he's the most buttoned-up guy. He won't have a pint. He won't do anything. Yeah. And then by the end, it's something else. So it's a wild ride, The World's End. So it's great.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now let me see where we're at now, because that was my six. Your six was Nebraska, so you can give me a five is what you can do.
I'm going to give you a five.
Give me a five, Corey.
I need a tight five. I'm going to light
you. Tight five, hey.
Hey, action kick.
Right. inside reference.
This is the inside.
Inside
material.
Stuff. All right. Number five.
Number five, a film I don't know if you saw.
Well, we'll see. It
was called Blue is the Warmest Color.
Blue is the Warmest Color. Didn't see
Absolutely.
It. All right.
They should have called this Pink is the Warmest Color.
Yeah, I know what it's about. This is I haven't had the chance to see Blue.
In the most basic, simple definition, it is the best teenage existentialist French love movie I've ever seen. Okay. Between two girls.
All right.
It's a French teenage love drama with kind of overtones, but gorgeous. Just a gorgeous movie, brilliantly made.
Okay.
Léa Seydoux, and I can't even begin to pronounce the other girl's name.
Adèle Exarchopoulos.
Yes, Adèle Exarchopoulos, or whatever. She plays the lead.
Exarchopoulos.
It's really about obsession and about, you know, she's a really smart high school girl who's a little she feels a little out of place because she's smart, and then okay. She meets this slightly older girl with blue hair, this, you know, artist.
Right.
And she just she'd had boyfriends before and had never thought of herself as gay or whatever, mm-hmm. but she falls in love with this girl.
Yeah.
And gets absorbed into their world. And it's about, like, all-consuming obsessive
yeah.
passion.
Okay.
And they have about a 12-minute lesbian scene.
Okay.
Now, there's been a lot of dispute about, a lot of argument. The actresses apparently hated the director.
Oh.
They thought he was exploiting them, basically. And,
No, you get deeper in the box. You go in.
Yeah,
I'm trying to do French.
Oh, she's deep in the box. In le box. She's all the way in there. I mean.
Maybe we have a Trey Knuckle. Trey Knuckle. Trey Knuckle.
Yeah. Look.
It means three.
I understand what you're saying.
Three knuckles.
Yes.
All right.
There is beaucoup shot that is munched in this. Le shot. No, I'm telling you, this is as unsimulated a sex scene as I've ever seen.
Okay, hey.
In a movie. Thank you. I will say to scissor me timbers.
Well, here's the thing.
Now, if you want to, by the way, it's got to be a Mr. Skin Hall of Famer.
You can beat off to this.
I mean, you
saying.
Could beat. No, this is every bit as fulfilling
yeah.
as watching lesbian porn.
Okay.
If you're into that.
Yeah.
That's not why you go see the movie. The scene is not only just really intense and I saw it in a theater with other people.
Yeah.
Like the general public. And it's kind of uncomfortable to watch because
Well, everybody feels that way, you know, when you go see
it. Because it's a real sex scene.
Yeah,
real. It's not like Hollywood sex scene where there's like they do two pumps and a dove flies over. You know what I mean? Like, this feels like you're watching two people actually fuck.
Right. And, two pumps and the sun rises. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's uncomfortable. Yeah. And it's like the intensity of the passion between these two girls. Is kind of uncomfortable.
Well, whenever you do like a love scene without like a big swooping score behind it, and I don't know that this movie has it or doesn't, that makes it like intensely real. Like just the sound of people heavy breathing and stuff.
And if there
is, that's creepy.
I can't remember, but if there is music, it's kind of
it's muted.
What is the term? Indentic. What is the one where it's like from a source?
I know what you mean.
Like,
yeah,
they might have a CD put on in the background or something, but
right.
I don't remember there actually being music in the sex scene.
Right.
But.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of American. And it's funny with like all of the porn out now, it seems like movies, like real movies, have really just dumped love scenes and stuff. They almost don't exist anymore.
No, there aren't.
At least in Hollywood movies. No, I mean, this is a French movie.
Hey,
so
titties.
Right.
What happened to titties?
Well, Wolf of Wall Street's got them, and they're nice when you see them in that.
But
yeah, you don't
now. Well, the problem is
you don't see them like
the value of titties has gone down because we live a world awash with boobs.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and the point is, if you wanted to watch Blue is the Warmest Color without watching it, you could do that too. You know what I mean? You can go find someone will have cut out whatever the 7 minutes of these girls licking box.
Oh, right.
And put it somewhere. Because all I know is Neve Campbell made a movie where she was in a shower.
Yes.
That I never saw, but I've seen that shower scene many times.
I Love My Job, I think it's called.
Like somebody put up like the raw footage of that. Did you ever see that?
It's
like
yes.
raw footage. Yes. Like it's not even like stuff cut in the movie, just like the dailies of her in the shower.
Neve Campbell has to have the most disappointing nipples I've ever seen.
She did wild things and like wasn't naked somehow.
It's like a side boob.
Right.
And you're
like Neve Campbell.
Denise Richards did all the heavy lifting in Wild Things.
Well, the Wild Things was like, I'm going to show everything except for my two nipples. Like everything else is, you know, like not her pussy, but you know what I mean? Like,
I know.
I'll be completely nude, but not my nipple. It was very weird.
It went to great lengths.
Anyway, Neve Campbell's washed up.
She has kind of sunken in, she had inverted nipples.
You wanted big silver dollar pancake nipples and you didn't get them.
I don't know about the nose, but hers were like concave.
Okay. Well, some girls have the girls. You wanted pointers. You wanted some real...
You want pointers.
You wanted...
Lea Seydoux.
You wanted some sweater bumps.
Adele Excarpopoulos in this. These girls are hot, big-lipped, kissing each other.
All right.
All up in that business.
Believe it or not, I'll go see this. I won't go see this. I'll watch it at home.
Well, you're going to have to... Here's the problem, though.
Yeah.
You're going to have to sit through...
Yeah,
a lot of lesbian drama.
That's what I heard. It's like 3 hours long.
So maybe you should just watch the sex scene.
Maybe I will.
But
you're saying the movie's good. It's your number fucking five.
It's a really great movie.
It's better than The Wolf of Wall Street and Philomena.
It's a really great movie. It really is beautifully, brilliantly acted, and it's about a lot of heavy shit about love. But you know, it also in a weird way, it's a little predictable. But
okay.
It is worth seeing. It's an experience.
All right. That's Carrie's number five. Now, let me just see where we're at. You might have to give me another one because, excuse me, my five was I got Neve Campbell titty on the mind. Dallas Buyers Club was my five and Philomena was my four.
Okay.
So why don't you give me a four and we'll go from there.
My number four is a new film by a couple of upstart directors from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Named Joel and Ethan Coen.
Uh-oh.
It's called Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oddly enough,
that's not the porn.
Right.
No.
I don't want to be inside Llewyn Davis.
I would not.
Yeah,
no.
I saw this too.
You don't want to even be outside Llewyn Davis. You don't really want to be around the guy.
Yeah, it's kind of the point of the movie, isn't it?
Exactly. It's set in 1961 in New York in Greenwich Village before folk music actually really took off in the early days when it was really more about... It wasn't Bob Dylan wasn't famous yet.
There's
on
a moment.
The cusp.
Yeah.
Joan Baez, Bob Dylan. This is she was famous before he was, but
yeah.
It's not before folk music got politically conscious.
Right.
It's really when people were singing old workman songs and like sea shanties and stuff.
It was really more about traditional
folk music and stuff.
Now, go ahead.
Play some of the tracks.
Yeah, here's some. Oscar Isaac, the lead actor in this.
And Oscar Isaac sings all his own material.
This is
performs
good.
The stuff.
Yeah.
The music was curated by T-Bone Burnett.
Of course it was.
He also did Oh Brother Where Art Thou for the Coens, which was all bluegrass.
Yeah. The music's great. It's really good. So
really good music. Oscar Isaac sang it himself. It's a frustrating movie.
Well, yeah.
It's a movie about a guy who doesn't succeed.
Yeah.
And he doesn't succeed for a lot of reasons, all of which are from himself.
Yeah.
He keeps success away from himself. He had a partner who committed suicide, and I think he's still mourning that guy.
Yeah.
And if you're going in expecting a traditional narrative about a guy that does something and then goes somewhere. This is about a guy who...
Right, well, this is
about a string of mishaps.
It's about the journey and not the destination, I think this movie, and it's not on my top 15, but I did like it, and it's in my honorable mentions. It probably needed a destination. In fact, I read an interview with Joel Coen where he goes, this movie doesn't really have a plot. And it really isn't. It's really just 5 or 6 days out of his life or a couple weeks out of his life.
Yeah, a week out of his life.
And you just see it, and it's funny because the movie sort of starts and ends in this exact same place. And so it just kind of shows, like, this is every week of this guy's life. And it's just kind of this spiral, and he's not really going anywhere. But at the meantime, the characters are great. The setting's amazing. It really recaptures, 60s Greenwich Village. And the music, of course, is great. And, you know, even some of, like the Justin Timberlake and Carey Mulligan, they were, like, based on real people.
Yeah, they're good.
Well, this is based on Davon Ronk.
Right.
Who wrote a book.
And a
couple other guys, but they said it was
lesser
based on
known
his,
folk
his book, and they played Davon Ronk at the end. And, he was the guy who was, like, the big... He was kind of the big heater on the folk scene before Dylan hit it.
Right.
And then Dylan became famous and Von Ronk. Nothing ever happened to Von Ronk.
Right.
But if you read any Bob Dylan book, there's a million references to Davon Ronk. And even, Springsteen, put out an album this week. And he did an interview with NPR. And he said, he was signed out of the New York folk scene. Now, this was the early 70s.
Yeah.
So it was almost over. But he said, you know, he played in The Gaslight, where a lot of this movie takes place, and he would open for Dave Von Rock. And he said, I saw Inside Llewyn Davis, and that was my life. I'd go from couch to couch playing my songs. Eventually, I got to audition for John Hammond at Columbia, you know, and all that stuff. So it's the setting's great, the music's great. I don't know that it really has a point at the end, and I think that's for some people who watch that and go, like, what was the point of that? And it's not, it's not supposed to.
The first time I watched it, I was a little frustrated by it. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
When I saw the trailer, this trailer came out of Sundance about this time of year, last year, and I said, oh, shit, I'm all about this.
It's the
Coen Brothers. It's New York folk scene. I'm into it. Because I love early Dylan and Phil Oakes and stuff like that in a weird sub-corner of my personality. But when I first saw it in the theater, I was a little kind of, like, put off by it, and particularly by the ending.
Yeah.
And then I watched it again, and I really appreciated what they did.
I liked it.
I think it's pretty brilliant. I think it's...
This actually has a feel of... This could be like an HBO series or something about folk singers.
Yeah, it's not really a movie.
Sort of,
You could actually follow more of this guy.
You could have more of this. You know, you could just follow these folk singers in the 60s and tell their stories. Right. And, you know, because he goes to Chicago and auditions, and there's all, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, us in show business can relate to, comedy and that kind of stuff.
Maybe it was personal for me, too. It's a story about an asshole.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. It's about a guy who has artistic integrity.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's even on a song that's going to be a hit, and he doesn't think it's good enough to be a hit.
Right, yeah. In fact, I got that one.
So he, he signs away his loyalties to it.
This is the movie, yeah. He gets called in last minute to do the session, and he goes, well, I don't need royalties. I just pay
me
cash.
He doesn't think it's going to be a hit.
Yeah.
Because he thinks it's garbage.
This is sort of a novelty record about the space...
About John Glenn.
Space program and John Glenn, It's Adam Driver and Justin Timberlake.
Again, Adam Driver, Alex Karpovsky.
Alex Karpovsky's
in this movie.
But it's a real good movie. I didn't put it in my top 15 because it just lacked a little... You know, I'm trying to recommend stuff to people, and I kind of see people going like... watching this and being a little like, you're shrugging their shoulders.
Oh, I think most people are going to watch it and go, what was that about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think it's really rich movie, and it is about the journey.
Yeah.
And I think people expect it to act like a movie. It doesn't act like a movie.
Yeah, it does feel more like a series, like a real...
It acts like an incidental segment of this guy's life, showing you why he's struggling. Yeah. But Oscar Isaac is great.
Yeah, he's great. And
John Goodman comes in and is really funny.
The other actors, there's really not another actor that's in it for more than like 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah, Carey Mulligan has a pretty good, juicy little part.
Yeah, but it's really just him intersecting with these people for 5 minutes and then just going somewhere
else. Couch hopping somewhere else.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I mean, I liked it, and I liked the Coen Brothers. It wasn't my favorite movie from them, but... it's not, you know. The other thing is, people are going like, "Why is this nominated for the Oscars Best Picture?"
It's kind of a bummer. That's why.
Well, and this is my feeling with it. We all liked this movie. You liked it. I liked it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not either of ours favorite movie. And the feeling is, if you see enough movies, this won't be your favorite movie. It'll be your third or fourth favorite. And I just go like, should the Best Picture nominees be movies that are just people's third favorite, or should it be we all in like different movies? But this is every, you know, somebody is going to think that 12 Years a Slave is the best. Somebody is going to think Wolf of Wall Street is the best. And if you see Wolf of Wall Street in this, you'll probably like Wolf of Wall Street more. I mean, many people will like 12 Years a Slave
better
more.
Than True Grit, which was a big hit for the Coen Brothers and got an Oscar nomination.
Right.
And everybody loved, and it made a lot of money.
No Country for Old Men, I think, was them at sort of their height, right?
Their popularity and
critical acclaim sort of intersected there. And then the other ones have been a little more, True Grit people like.
So I love this one. I love A Serious Man.
Okay, yeah.
I love, I think Lebowski's maybe their most popular movie.
Okay, yeah, well.
It was not at the time.
It was not at the time, but yeah.
But anyway.
But it's really good. Again.
They're kind of, you know what, Fargo is probably everybody.
Oh, yeah, Fargo too, of course. Fargo
they
was
probably think that's
universally
their best,
acclaimed. But it's
I
good.
I think it is funny that the Coen Brothers have a really bleak sense of humor.
Yeah.
This is a black comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's about failure.
Right.
And I think that's why it turned people off.
Yeah, there's not much in it that is funny for the sake of being funny. It's just...
It's
sad.
He's always making jokes and nobody's getting being made fun of.
Right, yeah. It's a comedy that doesn't take place in a funny world.
No.
The world is humorless. Yes. And he's trying to somehow try to bring humor to it, right. Or, you know, and it's, yeah.
He's always making comments and quips that people aren't getting.
Yeah.
So maybe I identified with it.
All right. It's good. I liked it.
It is about a jerk, and I feel like I'm a jerk.
Just missed for me. But,
all right, then.
I liked it. It just didn't make my top 15. Here's my number three. And as much as I've talked about, a movie is a journey and not a destination. This movie kind of is about the destination, but there's so much other stuff in it. And this is kind of a big Hollywood idiotic movie. Or actually, it's not. Anyway, it's called Prisoners.
Oh.
It's with Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh.
And to me, I'm putting this movie right up there with the best, whatever your procedural film that you want to say is the best.
Okay.
Seven, Silence of the Lambs, Zodiac, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I think this is right up there with them. I think I liked it more than Seven.
Yeah.
I don't know if I liked it more than Zodiac, which also starred Jake Gyllenhaal, but I thought this was great. You know, and it's one of those movies, it's about a kidnapping, and Hugh Jackman's daughter is kidnapped, and nobody knows what happened to her, and there's suspects, and Hugh Jackman is kind of this, he's a real badass father, and he tries to get revenge in his own way, but the guy that he suspects did it may or may not have actually done it. And the thing about this movie is, and when I say conventional Hollywood, is it's one of those movies with 50,000 twists, okay?
Yes.
And I even think the main twist, or sort of the biggest sort of mystery, I think I kind of figured out pretty early on when I saw this. But there was so much other shit that I didn't expect to happen that it was still great. So it really is, you know, if you like thrillers and you want to see a movie that you know, like I said, if you like Seven, Silence of the Lambs, any of that stuff, Girl with the Dragon 2. I think you'll love this. Jake Gyllenhaal is awesome in this. And, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal is a guy that I look at and I see him in TMZ or something. I go, what a fucking prissy homo faggot. He's only been in great movies. I hate him for absolutely no reason. Because
Been in a few bad ones. He picks good
stuff.
He's
kind of just a great actor, and I really should stop hating him because I loved him in this movie.
He was in Prince of Persia.
duly noted. But he's great in Prisoners. Yeah. This is like I think this guy is French-Canadian, this director.
Yes, Denis Villeneuve.
And he hadn't made an English-language movie, so it's his first. And actually, speaking of Coen brothers, Roger Deakins was the DP on this, and this really deserves to win Best Cinematography. He's the Coen brothers' normal cinematographer.
He was for years and years, but he did not do.
He could do
Davis.
It because he was doing Prisoners, and that's what you know. And but it's beautifully shot. It takes place in I guess it was shot in Georgia, but it takes place in like eastern Pennsylvania, and it's very wooded, and it's like November, December, and it really just has a feel to it. And what's the other? Who's the black guy that's in this? He's great too.
The black guy. Yeah,
who's
I know
the black guy.
The black. Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard is great in this. Yeah. Everybody's good in it. The
it's a good
acting,
cast. There's like Terrence Howard, Viola Davis.
Yeah, Paul Dano. And it's a great thriller. I think it's easily
Maria Bello.
Easily the best thriller of the year. Maybe you're going to argue with me.
I actually it's kind of a movie based. It's all built on twists.
Yeah, it is.
So you can't really discuss it too much.
Well, you can't, but
I thought it was pretty well acted and made. I guess maybe this kind of genre is not my favorite.
Well, when you
so I might have kind of forgot about it a little
but
bit.
When you
it's not a bad movie at all.
Because you see movies trying to do this every year, and they do it poorly because they're all about that last twist at the end.
Sure.
And even like other couple movies we talk about in the other list have that where, like I said about Nebraska, it's not about that twist.
Mm-hmm.
And while this movie has it, there's a million other like red herrings and shit in it, and it's all interesting and it's all well acted, and it's violent.
I don't know if all of the
gritty
plot whole makes entire sense.
Believe me, there's an IMDb, you know, message board thread on this. Where people are like, this doesn't make sense, and I fucking hated it for this reason. I thought it was awesome. I recommended it to somebody, and she watched it, and she said it was awesome, too. So, Prisoners, I think, is a great movie. So, go see it. Hugh Jackman actually acted.
It's good.
Hugh Jackman not
he
dressed
did not
up
sing this part
as a fucking superhero. He's really
he
a guy.
He didn't sing it like in Les Mis.
Well, whatever, man. He's good. I like him.
Kiss the day goodbye.
I ain't watching that shit. I could give a fuck.
Oh God!
By the way, there's no. You notice there's no musicals that anyone's talking about as being good this
Joel,
year.
Joel, would you rather do?
Yeah.
Would you rather actually cup a man's balls or watch Les Miserables?
If I had to cup a man's balls, it would help. It would, I think it would help if Les Mis was on at the time. I think that would make it better. I think it would somehow be a little less dirty right. and a little more lyrical.
Tenderly
for me to,
cup the balls right. and maybe give him a jiggle.
Right, if I had to do that.
And then you're watching.
I would like to watch Anne Hathaway sing.
I'm the stronger man, Javert.
I would like to do
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, but, okay.
Hugh Jackman's great. It's a great movie. Prisoners. You'll like it, man. It's one of those movies, you know, as much as artsy-fartsy shit like Computer Chess I'm recommending, this is a movie that everyone will like. It's a great thriller, Prisoners. My number three movie.
I don't know if everybody will like, but it's... I don't...
Again, people are going to try to poke holes in it, and everyone's watched a million Law & Orders and think they know how everything works.
True.
But you know what? This movie is... Yeah. It's at the top of its class.
Okay.
It is the best in its genre.
I'll tell you what. There was a movie called You're Next...
Yeah,
that was a kind of a low-budget-y slasher movie yeah. that was the best of those kind of okay. movies, yeah. which are shitty movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know what I mean?
Well, like, you know, Prisoners, like I said, they'll do this on the cheap, and they'll do this with lesser actors, and they'll do this with lesser talent, and they're not as good. But this one is great. So
It's got a good cast, yeah. It's solid. I don't.
All right, that was my three. Give me.
We're not fighting much. You're going to fight now.
All right, let's fight.
Now we're fighting.
Here they come.
All right, ladies
and gentlemen. I'm writing it down already, you dick.
This is like Evander Holyfield and Riddick Bowe. Well, here it comes.
You'll regret this.
American Hustle, David O. Russell.
Number three. Now, look, this movie, well, you go ahead and say what you like about
starring
it.
Starring Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Amy Adams. Yeah. Bradley Cooper, sure. Jeremy Renner, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro, Louis C.K.
You ruined a big one there. Let's not belabor it, but you did ruin
he's a
something
cameo.
There.
He's in
okay,
it.
All right.
Yeah, is that a big reveal? Do people not know that?
It was one of the worst parts of the movie, but because I went like, you're making this faux Scorsese movie, and then you throw De Niro.
Well,
in it,
but
anyway, go ahead. Tell me what you liked about it.
De Niro was in Silver Linings Playbook.
I don't want to shit on it.
You know what?
I will in a second.
Look, I have heard people. I have you are not the only one.
Yes,
I've had probably a half dozen people who had to tell me how much they didn't like it.
Yeah,
I have a film group. And the film group was probably 85% in favor of it.
Yeah.
But there were
a
few couples who didn't like it. I can see the reservations people have about it. Because I think they were sold a different movie than what they got.
Well.
Right now there's trailers for Her, which is making it seem like it's some kind of wacky romantic comedy or slapstick comedy.
Yeah. Okay.
The trailers are doing it a disservice.
Yeah, sure.
And I think maybe people saw this and went, "Oh, that's like Boogie Nights, or it's like Casino."
It's not that at all. But
it's a farce.
It is, but it isn't. And that's the problem I had with American Hustle is that the story. First of all, the story isn't a great story. It's an okay story. It's based on a real incident, although everything's really been changed.
Well, in the beginning of it, it says,
you know,
there's a great titles card that says. It's not a title card anymore, but a title graphic, and it says some of this actually happened.
Yeah.
And it is not a direct adaptation of the Abscam scandal.
Yeah, and I watched this in the theater, and I went with our friend MC Sampler Harry.
Oh yeah,
and I think I liked about half of this, and then I got to a point where I went like, nothing else is happening.
Right, sure.
And they're gonna do this twist ending, which they fucking did in this, which I didn't, you know. Which again, you know, and here's my biggest problems with this movie are a couple things. Number one, the story. I think was convoluted and hard to follow, for one. Two, and this may be the biggest thing, was that the costuming in that, you know, like, okay, you got Christian Bale as a fat guy from Brooklyn, okay? Yeah. Was Paul Giamatti not around? Like, is that, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, and I get that, like, Christian Bale will gain weight for a role and he'll do this stuff, but I never once looked at him and went, that's not Christian Bale. I never once looked at that and went like, "That's not
Christian
Bradley Cooper."
Christian Bale was not, my favorite part of the movie.
And it's like, you know, he's a British guy, and it didn't work. And look, there's lots of British guys who will play American guys. The guy that plays Al Capone on Boardwalk Empire is a British guy, and he's fantastic. Yeah. And I buy for every minute I look at that, it looks like Al Capone to me.
He does look like Al.
But this just didn't work. And the other costumes, it's just like everything is, you know, I mean, Wolf of Wall Street.
You know, actually, you say Paul Giamatti. I would say, you know who would have been perfect for this?
Who's that?
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Okay, Philip Seymour. But what, you know,
would he not have been perfect?
And I kind of go like, you're trying to get, you know, you sort of cast this movie by, you know, you cast this movie based on resumes more than who would be right for it. I think in a lot of ways. I mean, Bradley Cooper's fine, but he's really just, you know, he's Bradley Cooper from every other movie.
Well,
as an FBI guy, I mean, Silver Linings Playbook, he was a little bit off of what the general, you know, he's not the guy from The Hangover in that, but he's kind of the guy from The Hangover in this.
I thought he was great in Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah, he does
in
a good movie.
He was very funny.
Well, that's a much better movie
but
than
there's
American
a problem
Hustle.
With his character.
Yeah.
Look, I thought American Hustle was just good old fashioned entertainment for
well,
adults.
It just,
I don't think it's got the. Now I put it up high on my list.
Yeah, you put it up way too high.
But it, I think Lou and David.
I think it was Philomena 10. In this
I might have screwed this list.
All right.
I'm admitting,
but
Philomena's a little low.
Okay. But the other, you know, the costuming.
You know what was like, happening? I was making this list, and I got to the end of it, and I went, "Oh shit, I forgot Philomena."
And there's some good acting. Jeremy Renner was great. Jeremy Renner disappeared to me. Jeremy Renner became a New Jersey mayor.
It's the best work.
Jeremy Renner did good.
Even including the Hurt Locker, it's the best
work. Yeah, Jeremy
work
Renner was
great. Jeremy
great.
Renner's ever done.
And I thought Louis C.K. was good. I thought Jennifer Lawrence was good at times. And
overacted.
Sometimes. Well, the thing, the worst scene I saw in any film is her singing Live and Let Die. It doesn't make sense. It's stupid. It ruins that song. That's
here's
like,
the
it's
problem.
It's the
with
worst
it.
Scene. It's so bad. I just was like cringing going like, because it kind of like was like that scene in Boogie Nights where the guy, what's the song in Boogie Nights that the drug dealer is acting out? It's
oh,
like
sure.
Sister Christian.
Right.
And it just felt like it was just that scene ripped out of Boogie Nights, slapped into American Hustle
well,
for no good reason. And it just was like, it was, it's, you know, here's the thing with David O. Russell now, his last three movies, it's a bunch of guys in weird outfits yelling at each other. And you know what I mean? And Silver Linings Playbook does that well. That was a good movie.
Well, Silver Linings
Fighter,
was in, you know what the difference
the
is?
The Fighter was a bunch of people with bad accents yelling at each other. And I didn't like that. And I didn't like this for the same reason. And ultimately, I just kind of went like, I don't know what the point of this was. It was just a bunch of noise. Like, look, they put in all the trappings of a good movie, and they slapped it all on a bad movie, and it's still not good.
You know, you, sir, are a well-known asshole. Look, I would say this. I think why I liked it, and why I think a lot of critics responded to it,
yeah,
is that it was fun. It was okay. Just, it was fun yeah. For adults. I think the messiness of it, I think the
but,
kind of the confusion of it is great. I like that.
I
it's not a direct, it is not a Scorsese movie.
Well,
it is not Boogie
but
Nights.
It wasn't.
It's just farce of those things.
I know, but it wasn't even, it didn't, it was, the whole thing was shot in like close-ups and two shots, and it didn't, it had none of the visual flair of something like, I know it's not supposed to, mm-hmm. But it didn't have the flair of like Wolf of Wall Street or Prisoners or one of these movies.
Well,
that
that's
was,
how David Russell
Well,
shoot.
I know, but it's... I know David O. Russell can make a good movie because I've seen him make a good movie. This one just isn't. And I, you know, I feel like people like this. People love Jennifer Lawrence. You look at it and people go, I like her. And it doesn't make any sense why you like her. There's something about her that is unspoken that you can't even define in why you like her. And I get that. And I also like her. I hated this movie, even though I liked her no. In it, you know, and I just don't, I feel like
you're
this,
off. Sir.
I feel like this is Oscar bait 101. Mm-hmm. Because what won last year? Okay, let's compare it to last year's Best Picture, which was Argo.
This is kind of the Argo
okay,
of this
but here's
year.
The thing. Argo was set in the 70s,
yeah.
And guys had big giant butterfly collars and fucking poofy hair, okay? But you know what? None of that mattered to the movie.
No.
All of that matters to American Hustle. All of that is what it is. It's let's put Amy Adams in a dress. Let's make each dress successively more outrageous.
Well,
let's put Christian Bale's hair, make it crazier from scene to scene. Let's keep throwing in these elements like the Robert De Niro cameo and all these things. And it just doesn't go anywhere. It wants to be a good movie, but it isn't.
Yeah. You're a little too hard on this thing.
I know, I'm not. I didn't like it.
Your Argo comparison is fairly appropriate because I think with Argo, Amy said during the Golden Globes when Affleck came out to present, she's like,
right.
You're lucky your movie came out last year. Because I think he wouldn't have a chance
well,
this year.
Well, Argo, if you remember, was a lot of people's like second and third best movie. You know what I mean? Like people,
which I think is what American Hustle is going to do.
And maybe, but you know, I just thought... And I also think that there's a trend in Hollywood now where it's also like it comes from Mad Men a lot too, where everything's going to be set in an era, and the better you do at capturing the era, you know, the more shit you throw in, like the Goldbergs on ABC, the more 80s shit you throw into shit you throw into American House, the more shit, and you don't need that. You know, it's not, well, you have it.
All
and it's
because
Wolf of Wall Street has it, but Wolf of Wall Street doesn't beat you over the head that it's 1985. Well, it doesn't.
Here's why, okay, the whole thing about the 70s, why it's set in the 70s.
Yeah.
The characters are all about appearances and about, you know, putting on a false front. Christian Bale with the comb over, the ridiculous 12-part comb over he's got to do.
Right.
Bradley Cooper's got a perm.
Yeah.
That's all absurd to us now because it's the 70s.
Right.
If this was set in 2014, they'd all have their teeth capped white,
but,
and it would be harder to sell it as a oversized comedy
element. They're not all dressed like they're from the 70s, okay? They're dressed every day, Monday through Friday, like it's Saturday night at Studio 54.
At the disco.
That's the problem with this movie, is there is no default, this is what I'm going to wear. It just becomes, it's a costume party.
It's cartoon.
It's like a 70s party.
Louis C.K.
was
not.
We've all gone to the bad 70s party, and people wear big Afro wigs. That's what this movie is.
Well, you know, that's a compelling point.
The
soundtrack is great.
Yeah, but I mean,
I rolled with it.
I just felt it was a bunch of people yelling at each other, and it was sort of like, it just was loud and tacky and noisy, and it didn't have any real content.
All of David O. Russell's movies are kind of like that.
I know, but
I Heart Huckabees.
Yeah, okay. I never saw that, by the way.
I thought it was like fifth rate Wes Anderson.
Okay, yeah.
I thought he was like trying to do intentionally quirky for quirky's sake. Mm. And his earlier movies were kind of like that.
Yeah.
Flirting with Disaster is funny.
Yeah.
But he got into kind of a shtick where he was just people yelling at each other.
Yeah.
So this one, you could say that. I think I like Silver Linings better.
Oh, I think Silver Linings was way better than this.
And maybe why? Because Silver Linings had a more definable genre that it was
in. Yeah, I mean, that was a more conventional film.
What is this? A crime movie? A family drama?
It's
a con artist movie?
Yeah,
it's a little too wide open. I like that about it. I think film critics... here's the thing, Joel. I think film critics, we think a little differently. You know why? Because we sit through every turd, which we still have to get to, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's just say we disagree on American Hustle. I don't think it's his best movie.
No.
And maybe I'll consider it again, but I think it was so much fun. Christian Bale to me was not awesome.
Amy Adams
is great.
Amy Adams is good, but she's good in everything.
Good.
You know, to me, it's a lot of sizzle and not a lot of steak.
That scene where they're in the dry cleaner, and he kind of they fall in love.
That was a nice scene.
That's a great. But you know what? David O. Russell does not give you a lot of those moments.
Yeah, it's
he does not give you a lot of the beautifully framed sequences.
Right. I mean,
Alexander Payne, if you look at Nebraska, is a way much better artist in crafting a frame. Yeah, yeah. Making
layout. Nebraska is the complete opposite of this movie. Nebraska is, you know, real people, and you know this movie is fake. Where that is every scene in that is real. This is fake, and I know it's about con artists, so it's supposed to be fake, and I get that element to it, but it just was too much of, you know. I mean, if they would have reined in the costumes and maybe pumped up the story and made it a little more followable, because even when you get the twist, you kind of go like, oh. Okay. You know, I mean,
I liked it.
I feel like it was made out of parts of better movies. It was Frankenstein of better movies.
I think it's kind of a parody.
Okay.
All right. But anyway, I think it's wall-to-wall entertainment, but I can see that there's some holes in it.
Okay.
What do you think? And you didn't even see my number two, I'm sure.
Well, it's my time for my number
two. Let's hear your number two.
Jack, which you didn't see, because I asked you before and you didn't see it.
Yeah.
It's called The Way, Way Back.
I did not.
And it's fucking great. And I'll tell you, this movie... I've ran into people who have seen this because it's like nobody... They released this at a very weird... They released it in the summer because I think because it takes place in the summer, they thought that's when people would want to watch this, you know, coming-of-age story in the summer. But it really should have been done in award season because it's got... And I know the movie had been sitting around for a while. I think it was like Sundance last year. It premiered, and so, you know, they waited a while to put it out, even from that. But it's just so, it's the most fun. It's like, it's one of those things where you just want to live in that world. You just want to go like, I want to go to this fucking beach town and hang out at the water park.
Well, that's
And it's great. And it's a coming of age story. I've talked about it before. on this. You know, it's about a boy and his it's the kid's like 14. His mom, you know, has a boyfriend who Steve Carell is the mom's boyfriend who's a dick. So Carell is not funny in this. He's playing a bad guy, basically. And they go to his beach house, and he has to sit there the whole summer, and he's got nothing to do, and his sister's a big dumb slut who's out banging guys, and he can't find anything to do, but he finds, like, a kid's bike in the garage, like a girl's bike, and he rides it to the water park. And there he finds what's his name? God damn it. I can never remember this guy's name. What's the actor's name? The guy from fucking – the guy that played The Gong Show.
Oh, Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell, and he meets Sam Rockwell at the water park. And Sam Rockwell, and I saw...
You know what?
What?
Sam Rockwell would have been a dozen times
in American Hustle. Okay, Sam Rockwell.
Christian Bale.
But Sam Rockwell,
if they had a cast,
and they wrote this...
Damn it! Now I want them to redo American Hustle with Sam Rockwell. How much better would he have been than Christian Bale, right?
But anyway, so they wrote this... Now, this is the guys... These are the guys that wrote Descendants. Jim, what are their names?
Jim Rash,
and I forget the other guy's name. Yeah. But the guys wrote Descendants, and they wrote and co-directed this.
Isn't it the guy, Nat Faxon?
Nat Faxon and Jim Rash.
From Ben and Kate.
Yeah, it's the guy from Ben and Kate and the guy from Community. And they're both in this. They have small roles in this. And Maya Rudolph is working at the water park. And they get to this. And they said, and I saw this when we were watching this, and I go, they wrote Sam Rockwell to be Bill Murray in Meatballs. They said this is the prototype for this character, and they wrote it, and it's got that same swagger and the same humor. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, like, his dad owned the water park, and he walks around like he's the king of the water park, and he's showing this kid the ropes. So it's very much like Bill Murray and Chris Makepeace in Meatballs. And of course, there's like the girl next door who is Anna Sophia Robb, who's like the cutest girl ever, and he gets a crush on her, and they go through
all right,
that.
You liked it,
and it's really fucking great. I mean, it's like this is a movie that like. I mean, like, if you want a date movie, you want to rent something that your girlfriend will like.
But is it
just rent this movie? It's so
is
good.
Is it to the level of a best of the year?
I think so. It was literally my favorite movie. The one that's number one is number one for different reasons than this is number two, if that makes sense. Like, this movie was just the world that they created.
Did you
was just
happen
fun.
To see the to-do list?
I didn't see the to-do list. And you know why? Because every time I went to watch that, I would look at, like, the user reviews.
And people hated it.
And it got, like, negative reviews.
I would say that the to-do list is uneven.
Yeah.
And doesn't work completely. But it does also, you're talking about creating a little world you want to live in. There's a kind of nice little pocket realm in the to-do list that... Well, you know,
this movie, honestly, had they released this in award season, I honestly think this would have gotten nominated.
All right.
For the script, I think Rockwell, I think it was Entertainment Weekly I was reading, was like, how come Rockwell didn't get nominated for this?
Sam Rockwell gets no love.
And he's so great. Maya Rudolph
is
great.
He's one of my favorite actors.
I mean, just Toni Collette is the kid's mom. Allison Janney is the drunk neighbor where Anna Sophia Robb's daughter. So you know all the actors, and it's just a fun... Oh, man. And you look at the poster, and you go, like, I don't want to watch this, but I'm telling you.
I want to make every movie with Sam Rockwell now. He's the best.
Yes.
All right.
This is 4.25 stars on this.
He's
I don't
in
know
Moon?
Is it who?
No, Sam Rockwell was in Moon.
Moon, yeah. Moon was a great movie, yeah.
I love Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
I'm trying to get this. It is in, what is it from? It's in the top 500 on IMDb. It has an 85 on Rotten Tomatoes, Corey, the way back.
All right. All
this
right.
This is a great movie. You should really go out of your way to see this because it's a rental. It's fun. Again, I didn't call this. I called The World's End the best pure comedy because this is more of a dramedy, but it is a comedy.
Do you think
this ending is a movie?
Do you think that ending worked in the
of The World's End? I thought it was ridiculous.
I did not think it.
But I mean,
I didn't think it related to anything.
But the movie runs the spectrum of being. This serious movie about, you know, guys reuniting to being, you know, a movie about, you know...
Much like This Is the End, it was excessive.
Okay, well, all the Armageddon movies are bad, and I said that at the ending. You can never do the ending of those good.
These guys get an idea and they take it too far.
Yeah, they say this movie made $21 million at the box office, which is ridiculous.
You know, I heard a lot of good feedback.
The way back. Yeah, it's great. You should see it, Corey. You would love this. This is like...
Well...
This is... But if you like
kind of a good year for quirky teen comedies.
Yeah, it's great.
There was another one called The Kings of Summer.
Yeah, I never saw
which
that.
Which was not...
I looked up.
Which had some kind of...
I saw that to rent and I didn't, but
it's not bad. It's
yeah,
a fun
I think this is the best. Because I'll have one in my... I'll have one in my honorable mentions that wasn't as good as this. But this one, this was the greatest.
Oh, you still got honorable mentions.
I still do. But, you know, this is like if you liked Little Miss Sunshine or something, that's the vibe you're going to get from this.
All right.
And it's great. So give me a number two, Corey.
Good God. Short Term 12. You did not see, I'm
sure. Didn't see Short Term 12. Don't even know what that's
about. About 9 people saw Short Term 12.
How about 12 people?
Maybe 12 people.
Make the joke better.
It's so true.
What is this about? I don't even know. I'm
Short Term 12, and it's another movie in which you just tell, if I tell you what it's about,
it's too much.
Doesn't sound good. It's about the young adults' advisors at a youth home for, like, it's kind of a halfway house for teens.
Okay.
It's like kids who have nowhere else to go in the system.
Yeah.
And it's about Brie Larson is the girl who's the lead. And it's just really, it's just kind of like a day in the life, kind of, or maybe a couple days in the life of what goes on in this youth home. And these kids are all kind of, they've ended up here because something bad happened to them.
Yeah.
And it's about the effort to keep these kids together, to keep them happy, to keep them from falling apart. And it's just about these kind of, the people who work with these kids. It's quiet. It's not flashy or showy in any way, but it's really as lived in and real and warm a movie as I saw all year.
This is not a comedy.
It's not a comedy, but it has some.
It has humorous. I mean,
natural.
Natural. Comedy.
It has natural humor.
Sure.
It has.
It's like Nebraska is not a comedy, but it's funny.
It's just kind of the funny shit that happens during a day or whatever, or people tell a joke to each other because it's a stressful moment. It's a natural kind of. It felt real. A lot of times when they make a movie about mental patients or troubled kids, they go overboard.
Okay.
This feels really real. These kids feel like they have real problems, and Brie Larson is committed to helping these kids, and it's really just about her effort to make these kids' lives better, and her own life has problems because it's a movie. But gorgeously acted, brilliantly made.
Apparently, you need to rent this now, is what it is.
Okay.
Not on Netflix yet, but you can rent it on Amazon and Vudu and those kind of things, iTunes.
It's got an 8.2 on IMDb.
Yeah, it has a really good rating on this, too.
And so, what's it on Rotten Tomatoes?
I've got to click on it. The Rotten Tomatoes on that is... Oh, the Rotten Tomato is 99.
It's a great movie.
All right, well, it beats my Way, Way Back, which was an 85.
Which is a good score. But 99. It is...
99.
It's really just one of those
probably
movies...
Probably a smaller sample size.
It's a very
size.
Small movie. It's really just one of those movies you will get absorbed in.
Okay.
And you will just... You will roll with it and fall into that world. And it's not exactly, it's not like the World of Oz.
Sure.
It's not the happiest place to visit, but it's so well done. Brilliant, gorgeous,
all right,
wonderful little movie.
I'll go see that.
That movie to everyone
good,
who listens.
Good, well,
in fact,
I'll see that. You see the Way, Way Back, and then
we'll
come back and compare notes.
The thing with Short Term 12 is I tried to get my film group to watch it.
Yeah.
It was in the theaters for so limited a time.
Yeah.
Half of them got to it, and the other half didn't get to see it.
All right.
So we never talked about it. Great, great movie.
Good.
Under the radar movie. But Brie Larson, who's in Don John as well, in a very different part, this was like her big coming out party, and it was great. Not like the... Blue is the warmest color.
Well,
kind of coming out. I mean, that was. I'm telling you,
Dallas Buyers Club.
This is. My nose is right up in the taint. I'm just saying. There's no way they faked it.
I'm gonna put a star next to that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put it. Let me put a star next to that one.
This is a wonderful podcast.
All right, let's go to my number one movie, my best picture of the year, which I'm seeing on a lot of number ones. If it's not 12 Years a Slave, it's usually this.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, I'm not Mr. It's funny that last year Life of Pi was kind of, a lot of people's number one movies, that wasn't Argo. Anyway, my number one this year is Gravity.
Okay.
And it's a lot of people's number one. And it just, here's the thing. There's nothing like Gravity.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. To see this in the theater in 3D is mind-blowing. This was like seeing Star Wars in 77. It was fucking crazy and so well done. And, it's one of those, it's a ride. I'm not saying, as a movie, you could say, geez, it's very minimal with its dialogue. Mm-hmm. It is also, a lost at sea movie. It is sort of like those movies, like I said, that I liked like Contiki and Captain Phillips and that. But it's you know, there's nothing like it. You know, somebody decided to make this movie
with Gravity,
and a lot of people would have made this poorly. And I think when this movie came out, I don't even know if they expected this to be good because they dumped it at the end of the summer. And it, you know, they didn't think that this was like a tentpole.
It was a surprise hit.
It wasn't a tentpole.
It's not a tentpole because it's a story that's self-contained.
And but I mean, you know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't anything that people were expecting to be, you know, a moneymaker. Even you know,
it was a surprise hit. I would say that I agree with you. The problem with Gravity is
the problem.
You better go see it in a theater.
Well, yeah, that's
it. Does not play on TV.
Well, yeah,
the same
I mean,
way.
It'll play. It just won't. You'll just be like, "What's the big deal?"
It's
and it's the same thing as Avatar, where you just
absolutely
go, you need to see this in the theater.
100% the best. I had it on a list. I had a list of like other categories or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was
a best 3D. Not even.
I
close.
Said
yeah,
it was
yeah,
the
yeah.
best yeah. excuse for 3D in IMAX.
Absolutely, yeah.
In IMAX and 3D.
Yeah.
Or one of the both. Pick one of the
yeah,
other.
Yeah, I mean,
I think you have to see it in 3D. Because,
yeah, 3D for sure. Because it's not it. That's what was amazing about it. The story's great. The acting's great. But the 3D effects in the way they did
space. I don't
space
think the story.
This,
I don't know if the story's great.
Well, it's the same story.
Good.
It's the same story as fucking All Is Lost. It's the same fucking
the
story.
The story is good and serviceable. But, the filmmaking is exceptional.
Yeah,
I think it is a brilliantly directed.
Right,
Alfonso Cuarón deserves.
Yeah.
The Oscar for Best Direction.
Yeah, I think so.
More than any, maybe Nebraska is a directing kind of movie, but this is because, you know, they did technical stuff in here. I'm not even sure really how they did it.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, so much of it is, you know, and I think I might have said this on the show. I said, like, that movie where George Clooney's an astronaut, it looks like they just copied his head and pasted it into fucking. And you kind of did for a second, but then there's so much other amazing shit in here. It's just like. It's 2001, but with a real like sense of urgency. In where that 2001 is also about being lost in space and being stranded.
Well, you're just talking from a technical aspect because thematically they're not alike.
No, but they're both about people who are lost in space, essentially.
Well, yeah,
they're sent somewhere and they can't get back. They're both that. So I'm saying,
in a weird way, this movie is almost like 12 Years a Slave, in that it's abusing the audience. It is like one. Life and death moment to the next.
Okay,
the characters are under constant strain,
right?
Constant stress, and it doesn't let off the throttle.
But it's
a moment to breathe.
It is. It's one of those movies. Like, what the hell do you do now? Mm-hmm. Like, you're fucked now. Like, you're watching the movie and you're going, this movie's going to be over in 5 minutes because they're both dead or whoever. And then you're like, oh, now they're fucked. Oh, they got out of that. But it's not. It's not like a movie where. You know, and then we'll talk about. I want to talk about The Hobbit for a second.
Oh, God.
But, you know, the first Hobbit movie was one of those things where they were about to be killed and they got out of it through dumb luck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not very satisfying to an audience to just go, like, oh, they're about to fall off a cliff and the fucking big giant monster came and swept them away and rescued him. It's not the same thing. This is where
a giant eagle gets out.
Right,
she,
but it's
all,
like
it's all through
but this is all through her own resourcefulness that she gets out of these situations, and it's so great. And you just go, "Oh man, I never would have thought of that." And how did she figure that out?
It's a very good movie. It is
it's
brilliantly
suspenseful
from a 3D IMAX perspective.
From a technical,
it's the best. It's a game changer.
It's one of the best technical movies ever made.
Narratively, it's good but not great.
Okay.
I think like Captain Phillips and this are both to me on the same level of this is better as a directing experience.
Sure,
but I think they're both movies where they're very tightly directed.
Yeah.
They're suspenseful, but you don't learn a whole hell of a lot about. The people.
No, but it's, you know.
It's brilliant.
And it's funny because I think the movie kind of leaves you wanting more. You kind of want to go, like, at the end of it, you go, oh, I could have stuck around another 20. And the movie doesn't even do it. Because the movie starts, like, you're in the shit. You're in the shit from the minute it starts to the minute it ends.
Right.
There's no downtime. There's no, that scene where there's, you know, the guy's debriefing them. There's none of that shit. It's all action.
What was the movie where Ryan Reynolds was in the coffin? There was a whole movie where he's stuck in a coffin.
Oh, yeah, and he's buried in Iraq. I saw that movie.
Claustrophobic.
Yeah, I forget what
it's very. This had a feel almost like that, although in space it's got a bigger scope.
Yeah, that was a pretty good movie.
It's got a bigger scope, but it's claustrophobic. I don't want to poo-poo Gravity. I'm just telling you why it wasn't my top movie.
Well,
it's brilliantly made. And I think
the Ryan Reynolds movie was called Buried. It came out in 2010. That was a good movie too. But this is better.
You have to see Gravity.
Yeah, if
in
you
the
didn't
theater.
See it in the theater, and I think they may bring this around for the Oscars because I think it's going to win at least something, and they'll re-see it. So take a minute to go see this in theater. In fact, this is a movie I didn't want to say, but when I was talking about my dad. I went to my dad. I go like, Dad, I saw the greatest movie. I saw this movie, and it's in space. It's in 3D. You got to go see it. He goes, why the fuck would I see that?
Yeah.
So I don't fucking watch shit like that. That's your dumb shit. Yeah. And I go, no, it's not Star Wars, Dad. It's great. You love it. Eh, I don't fucking want to see it. You know, but so it's like, no, you'll love it. Go see it in 3D theater. And he was
it's not Transformers
it's
or
not,
anything.
Yeah,
like
that's what I think he thought I was trying to tell him. I go, no, Dad, it's not. It's a great movie. So anyway, Gravity's
it's
awesome.
It's a pretty elemental, simple
and,
story.
And I think if I look back, I'd have to look at my 2011. I think I've chosen 3D movies the last 3 years as my best. I think I picked Hugo.
Mm-hmm.
Life of Pi, and then this.
No, that's weird.
Which is
weird.
Those
are all good examples.
They're all great 3D movies. So anyway, give us a number one, Corey.
My number one, and I'm sure this might cause a fight too.
What's that?
Her.
Okay, well, it's not in my top 15, but it's in. I liked it.
Okay,
and they're not going to fight. So go ahead.
Okay, Spike Jones.
Save the
her.
Fight.
I thought it was just an amazing.
Save the fight
movie.
Till I tell you I like The Hobbit. But go ahead. You go.
Oh Christ.
Talk about her. I didn't like that much, but talk about her.
Her's a good movie.
Talk about
Let's
her.
Let's move on to The Hobbit. Look, it's great. It's Joaquin Phoenix who was, as they say, a pussy hair away from annihilation of his film career.
Yeah.
After he made that terrible,
I'm not there. Yeah.
Fake mockumentary crap.
Yeah.
That no one liked.
Right.
I couldn't even. God, I tried.
I never even saw that. So
watch that piece of crap.
Like most people, I just avoided that. Yeah. I had enough of that shit.
Well, my mind has been battered by things that most people have never seen.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix was almost on the edge of annihilation of his career.
Yeah.
This is great work.
Yeah.
He's
he did The Master, and that was good.
He
so
was good in The Master, and he's fanatic.
Yeah.
He's really, you know, when everybody goes on and they put Johnny Depp, they put his balls in their mouth.
Nah.
And Johnny Depp's real quirky and does a lot of shtick.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I completely agree with you.
You watch The Master.
Yeah.
And you tell me, Joaquin Phoenix is absorbed in that character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, really.
He's completely convincing as, like, a nerd who can't get chicks and stuff. It's amazing. Yeah, he's great.
I can't stop thinking about Sam Rockwell in American Hustle, how much better it would
have
been.
Yeah, he would.
As either Brad Cooper or Christian Bale.
You know,
he could have done either of those parts.
He's not an Oscar bait kind of guy anymore.
It's a shame. He's a great actor. Anyway.
But her is great. The world of her, which takes place in the near future,
is brilliant.
Is amazing. It's it's a great sci-fi.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my thing with this is I go, this is a great Twilight Zone.
It is.
Even though it's a love story, but it is a great Twilight Zone in the elements of it that
are... Like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, it's the best kind of science fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
In that the sci-fi elements aren't overwhelming.
Yeah.
This is a...
And it's all believable. Yeah. You do have to take a leap that a guy falls in love with his computer, but the movie makes you believe that it can happen.
This is in an unspecified future, which could be 15
it
years from
it's
now.
It's Los Angeles.
20 years from now.
At some point.
I mean, the only thing that's unbelievable is that LA has grown to such a size.
Giant skyscrapers.
Well, because what they did is they took.
They shot in Shanghai.
Shanghai,
right?
And LA. LA does. LA is a massive sprawl zone.
Yeah.
But they took Shanghai and composited it, so it looks bigger.
Right.
Shanghai is the most absurdly big city I've ever been to. It's massive. So they took the two.
Yeah, big glass skyscrapers. All over L.A.,
right.
Which isn't the case now.
No. L.A. has a lot
it
of...
It will be.
Yeah, but...
But,
anyway.
I mean, you're talking 50 years or whatever
could,
this
it
movie
could be
25, 100 years. It
50,
could be, yeah.
It's, but it's not far enough
they
away.
They don't have flying cars, but it's still... There's a lot
and
of
And in some
other,
ways, they just really don't have much different than what we
it's
do.
It's not, but the... Yeah.
The technology in this movie is based in a way like... At one point, I sat there and went, if this is the future and L.A. is this big, why do they still have desktops?
Yeah,
they do, and you know why? Because humans don't change.
Yeah, it's
the
it's,
technology can't
right,
get
and it's
beyond
all,
where
it,
the humans.
But it's
are.
A lot of it is here now. It's just not as integrated. Where you know you do something on your phone and it shows up on your laptop, and you talk to it, and
this is,
you can get things. You know, like you can do things right. Like you know, like I do Evernote, where I write something on my phone and it's on my computer, and I can write it on my computer. It shows up on my phone, and it's all there.
It's all integrated,
and it all stays with you when you walk around, and it's all
you know.
And,
it's kind
you know,
of
the
like,
Google Glass thing where you have the camera in there and everything.
Well, it's kind of like
is being
Star Trek.
Seen and recorded.
It's kind of like Star Trek computers where anything they touch or pick up has whatever they were working on before.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not like an individual system.
It stays with you. It's wearable computing and all that stuff. But and he's great. And Scarlett Johansson, who you I hate to say that this is the best movie I've ever seen Scarlett Johansson in, and you don't even get to see her tits.
Nah.
She's not even in it, so that's really saying something.
Well, she's also really good in Don John.
Okay.
So go see Don
And you do
John.
See her tits, or at least in a shirt.
You
or
see a little bit of business.
You see enough, yeah.
You get a little side action.
But yeah, I mean, this is a great movie. I'm with you.
The costume designing.
Yeah.
The creation of the world that he lives in.
Yeah, the world is great.
It's fabulous.
The design, they should really win the Oscar for, like, whatever.
Costume design
art
or whatever.
Design
because
or
it's
whatever,
all, like,
art
very
direction.
Realistic stuff.
Yeah, it is.
It's like the shirts don't have collars.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wear high pants, like the 30s.
Yeah,
it's, but everybody's it's, wearing kind of earth tones.
It's a little,
and you,
yeah.
And you look at it and you go, I could believe that.
Yeah,
it's not like
it's
people
not,
walk,
it's not,
like
not that far
what they
off,
do
yeah.
where everybody's wearing lycra and rubber and
yeah,
silver
right.
to make it
big
look like the future.
Yeah, yeah,
no, it's
yeah,
a very believable, right. evolved fashion, and I thought the story was about every relationship.
Yeah.
This guy, the premise sounds dopey. Guy falls in love with his computer program. What it is it's like Siri
it's
times
Siri.
A thousand.
Yeah,
it's a highly evolved computer
and
program.
It's a learning thing where it's adapting to everything he's saying, and it's learning what he likes and doesn't like. And it's
Joaquin Phoenix is a guy who writes letters for other people. That's his job.
Right. Yeah, it's like you're doing this old technology, writing a letter. No one writes a letter anymore, so now we have professionals writing letters because no one does
If you want to write a personal letter to like your mom or something, he writes it for
you. He's the guy. So.
I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant movie the whole way through in design. Olivia Wilde, who's never been anything other than just kind of a pretty face, is great in her little scenes.
She's good. She has a few.
Amy Adams, again, playing
a
very different part than she did in American Hustle.
Yeah, she's kind of along for the ride, but she's good in what she does. I mean, she's
there's really funny, weird stuff, like the video games that they play are immersive.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And there's one that's like playing, you're being a mommy and you got to drop the kids off at school.
Yeah.
And you're like, I could totally see them making
it. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that is very near future and believable and has elements of things that already exist, you know. Using your hand as the video game controller sort of already exists.
Right.
But they've refined it.
This is just an advancement.
Yeah, and I guess my only critique, and the reason, and I thought very hard about, should this, because as I was saying, like, you know, I put shit like computer chess and rubberneck on here, and I left this off, and I thought you'd be mad at me, which maybe you are, but...
I didn't see Rubberneck.
Here's the problem with this. Believe me, you're not going to like Rubberneck anywhere near as much as you liked her. But again, where this fails me a little bit is when I look at this whole list and I go, would I want to watch her again? I don't know that you do. Because I think it's a thing that you experience and it's sort of when you know. Because again, this movie does have a twist ending a little bit. And when you know that, I think it sort of would color a second viewing of it. So I'm sort of like saying, I'm saying see this movie. I just don't know if this is something I would ever really need to see again. I love seeing it once.
I'm not putting it down.
I love seeing it.
I wouldn't call it a twist as so much as
it's
it doesn't play
you know,
out.
It
does, the
yeah,
way
I
you
mean,
might
it, but it's got a thing that when you know it's maybe things are not as what they appear to be in the beginning.
When you said Twilight Zone, I thought that too when I saw it.
Yeah, it was very Twilight
Zone. Because what the Twilight Zone did best and why it was the best show ever. Is they took those sci-fi premises and hit things, they hit truths about life in a way that you had to look at them and go, and this movie makes how we interact with our computers, what we want out of love,
right.
what we want from another person.
Yeah.
All of that's in this movie.
Yeah, but because
they talk
like,
with heavy stuff, but it's in like, this beautiful cover umbrella of a little faint sci-fi.
Yeah, well, it's like, hey, technology can give you companionship in a real honest way now. And you see the way people react to that.
Yeah.
And you see that people love that, and that's what people want. And, you know, when you have that, what is the result of having that?
Right.
And you sort of see the downside of it.
But it really makes you think about your own relationships.
Absolutely,
how you've lived.
Right, yeah.
What you put into a relationship.
Right, yeah.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's about, like, you know, is a relationship all about what you get out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And is that enough for you to be having a good time? Is that enough for you to be, you know, all that stuff? So I liked it. Again, let me just go through my, I've got some specific categories. But for my extra ones, I had heard 12 Years a Slave, Inside Llewyn Davis. The Spectacular Now was pretty good. It's another one of those coming of age movies. Like a bunch of those came out in the summer. It was an indie movie. It's a guy who made a movie called Smash, that I saw with Brie Larson's in this too, by the way. So anyway, Mary Elizabeth Winstead was in Smash. I talked about it because she's my dream girl.
Oh, she is good.
And she's in this movie for 5 minutes. But it's about a kid who's like an alcoholic and he's in high school. And he falls in love with this nerd girl who is and the reason I bring it up is because Shailene Woodley was the nerd girl that he falls in love with. And she's great in this. She is like the most believable teenager ever. I guess you didn't see this, right?
No, I didn't.
But it's not a great movie, but Shailene Woodley is awesome, and I think there's things you'll like in it. So I'm recommending it, but it's not, it's not my favorite movie, but it was pretty good. So yeah. I'm putting it in there. And the other one that I almost put in my top 15 was Behind the Candelabra.
Oh.
Which, you know, is so fun.
I didn't because it was a TV movie.
Well, I don't consider... But again, that was a movie that would have been in the theaters had the distribution...
It might have made my list.
I'm not categorizing things that way because, House of Cards is not on TV, but yet it's a television show.
It's a modern digital
world.
So
you can say it's a movie that would just air on HBO. So Behind the Candelabra was great. The other one, and then I'll let you do some because then I got my list of other documentaries. See, is Spring Breakers is fucking weird, and I liked it. And, this is available. If you have Amazon Instant Video, you can watch it for free on their streaming service, which is what I did. And I'll tell you, the problem with that is it turns into Scarface with hot chicks and... That didn't really work for me, but the beginning of it is, I thought, and I'll be honest with you, when Selena Gomez, minor spoiler, walks out of that movie, I think she was sort of the heart and soul of it, and then it just becomes pure chaos and pure, indulgence and pure, sex and drugs, and that wasn't as interesting to me. But I'll tell you, they shot that on film, because I looked it up, because I was watching, I'm going, this cinematography is awesome, and they shot that with, old 35mm Panavision equipment, and it looks beautiful. So Spring Breakers, I think, is worth seeing, although
it's really
a fucking weird movie, man.
People
will hate it.
I both hate it and like it.
It's a weird movie, but...
Harmony Korine makes movies that are really intentionally kind of provocative and annoying, and there's a good, I want to say about 35% of Spring Breakers is slow motion footage.
Yeah.
Of like kids puking and drinking and partying.
Right. It's like that MTV Spring Break footage.
Yeah.
But with actual naked tits and stuff.
But like grindcore music on the top of
it. It is, yeah.
And it's weird. I liked parts of it though. I did like Selena Gomez.
I
liked a couple of the other actresses.
Right.
And James Franco is nuts. I don't know if it all works.
Right.
I think it's kind of weird.
Well, those twin brothers that were Amar Franco were completely creepy. I mean, this movie could give you nightmares, Spring Breakers. And I'm not saying it's one of the best movies of the year, but I enjoyed, there was a perversity that I enjoyed in this. I hear you. I liked a lot of it. We'll give us some other.
There's a couple that didn't quite make the list, but I think we're good. Pacific Rim.
Okay.
Poorly acted. I mean, look, story is nonsequential, but as an experience.
It's in my worst, and I wrote in parentheses parts of it anyways. When the robots are fighting Godzilla, it's awesome.
Right.
When the people are talking, it's annoying and stupid.
And that's why I'm not saying it's
half and half a good movie.
I'm saying it's a... Yeah, but as a spectacle, it was great fun.
I enjoyed Pacific Rim on that level, too.
It was intentionally cartoony.
Yeah, it was.
Place Beyond the Pines.
Didn't see it. Good?
It's good. It doesn't really hold up to these other ones.
That's on HBO now. I saw it.
Yeah,
that,
it's a little too long.
I haven't watched it.
But Ryan Gosling is great in the first half.
Yeah.
And then Bradley Cooper is really good in this, too. I'm telling you, Cooper's trying to make himself.
I like Bradley Cooper, but he's just Bradley Cooper.
It's real close to making the list, but not quite. Oh, she's a fantastic documentary.
Yeah.
Called Stories We Tell.
Didn't see it. What's
which
it about?
Is Sarah Polley. Do you know her?
Yeah, I know her.
She's an actress.
She made the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire
life.
Which
is called
Take This Waltz.
Take This Waltz.
Which I said I was going to do a whole show where I just dumped on that for 2 hours. That was one of my goals for 2013, and I failed to do it, and I apologize. And believe me, there's still time, so don't watch that.
I had problems with Take This Waltz as well.
Yeah. But you like this documentary.
This documentary, it's about, you might also be annoyed by it because it is Sarah Polley. It's Stories We Tell, and it's about her trying to, things that she learns as an adult about her family.
Yeah, I remember this movie coming out.
So she goes back and tries to, her mom has passed away, and she tries to really unravel what happened with her mom.
Yeah.
And they mix they mixed actual footage from her childhood with stuff they recreated.
Okay.
And you don't realize it's being recreated till about... There's a point in the movie where you realize that the stuff you're watching has been recreated.
Okay.
And she has her real dad and her other... Anyway,
right.
It's really engrossing and an interesting movie.
You got anything else?
Was there some other... There were some good things, like 20 Feet from Stardom was pretty good.
Well, here's what I've got. I've got 13 documentaries that didn't make my list that are all good. I'm going to do them real quick, and if you saw them, just comment. Right,
sure.
Good Old Frida, about the Beatles fan club secretary. Oh, and look, I know you're going to watch it. You're going to look at that. It's an old lady who knew the Beatles. It's really a movie about the Beatles, and it's one of the best looks at the Beatles ever. So see that. Evocateur, the Martin Downey Jr. movie we both like.
I was going to name
By the way, these are all on Netflix, except for where I tell you, so you can see all these. Sound City was Dave Grohl's documentary about the famous recording studio where they made Nevermind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great because Paul McCartney reunites with the members of Nirvana. That's this movie where they did that. The Central Park Five, which is Ken Burns' daughter movie about the way those guys were falsely imprisoned for rape in New York City. And it's a true injustice, unlike the West Memphis Three where the guys are actually guilty. This one, these guys were innocent, and it's a really good documentary. The Ricky Jay movie, Deceptive Practice, I've talked about this
My
before.
My God, you've got a lot
it's
of
It's a straight documentary, but if you love magic, I think anyone will like this because it's just that good a movie. Ain't In It For My Health, a film about Levon Helm. If you love the band, you got to see this. They only finished it after he died, but it's a really good look at Levon Helm in his final years, a great artist.
Beware Mr. Baker.
That was last year.
Was that last year?
I think as we talked about last year.
All right, never mind.
But that was great, too. Yeah, Ginger Baker.
Maybe that was end
Yeah, because I think it was in my list, right. Yeah. Happy People, A Year in the Taiga. I talked about this earlier. That's Werner Herzog.
Dude, you're really watching a lot of
these are all
stuff.
On Netflix. Happy People, A Year in the Taiga with Werner Herzog. He goes to basically Siberia and sees how people live. And it's incredible the way these people have to sustain on how they have to set fox traps and live in the woods until the fox gets caught so they can bring it home. It's crazy. But it's a real good documentary. Dirty Wars is nominated for Best Documentary. It's about JSOC. It's an investigation into, these raids on Afghan villages where innocent people are killed and why the government won't admit that something happened. Mm-hmm. And he looks into it and he finds out that, this group JSOC is behind it. And then, of course, JSOC ends up killing Osama bin Laden. It's an investigative documentary. It's nominated for the Oscars. I think it's a little heavy-handed, but you can see it being lefty, political, and appealing to Hollywood. But it was good. The Square is a Netflix original documentary. They've got a couple of these now. But this is about Tahrir Square in Egypt. And and it's actually probably the best document there'll ever be of that event. The problem is what happened in Egypt was they got rid of Mubarak, who they didn't like. Then
was
a bigger asshole, and they had to get rid of him. And you kind of get the feeling that that's what's going to happen in Egypt, is every asshole is just going to take over. But it's still a really good look at that, and I think people would like this.
When you have a country with no history of democracy that has a revolution, it's going
to
be bumpy.
And you sort of beating your head against the wall to watch this because you're going why don't you run for office? Because there are all these young guys leading this revolution, and it's really a good documentary, but... you may not care if you don't care about Egypt so much. Cutie and the Boxer is the other nominated Oscar picture.
My God,
this is on Netflix. It's about two Japanese artists, a husband and a wife. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, they're wacky and crazy and kooky. Did you see this?
Yes.
It's good.
I did.
You don't need to see it, but it's good.
Did the Ai Weiwei movie come out last year, too?
I think that did, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.
A couple more. Stone Roses Made of Stone is on Amazon Instant Streaming. It's a behind-the-scenes look at the reuniting of the Stone Roses, and they played some of the biggest concerts of all time when they reunited. And if you like them, you'll like it. I talked about Blackfish already.
Mm-hmm.
And the final doc that I had in my 13 was 20 Feet from Stardom, which is also nominated for Best Documentary. I thought that movie got kind of weird at the end and kind of felt like...
It didn't hold...
It made you feel guilty that these women weren't stars, and I'm like, that's kind of not my fault. fact that this woman didn't have a hit and she sang on Gimme Shelter and she was great on that.
You're supposed to feel bad for a girl who spent 20 years touring with the Stones.
Yeah, and I just kind of...
It's a good life for just about anybody.
But the stories about how they recorded some of those songs are great. If you love rock and roll documentaries... Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, the story about Gimme Shelter is amazing.
Darlene Love.
Yeah, Darlene Love.
great.
The final, the end credit song is Darlene Love and the E Street Band playing together. So it's good.
So and just didn't make the list. Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
I never saw that.
Which I thought was pretty good, but not fully there.
I got a couple more. I wrote down blockbusters that were decent.
Oy.
You don't get a lot of these because I think that was one of the themes of the year was how bad people didn't like. People didn't like that Star Trek. People didn't like Lone Ranger. People didn't like a lot of these big, you know, big movies. So I think that's kind of the year, right? The disappointing blockbuster.
Yeah. It was
but anyway, I thought these were okay. I thought World War Z was pretty good. Elysium was not great, but I'll tell you, you talk about the setting of Her and Near Future.
Yes.
The setting of Elysium is fucking amazing. It really is like L.A. turned into, like, you know, the slums of Rio de Janeiro, and it's really well done.
People dumped on Elysium and said it was terrible. I didn't think it was terrible.
No,
it just didn't work as well.
You can tell it's a director who has a great imagination, but the story's too conventional.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the problem with it.
Well, they also got to a point where they didn't know what to do with the story.
Yeah, and it's good. I mean, I liked it, and I also... The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Here's what I'll say about The Hobbit. We don't have to say a lot because we've already talked about it on the show. Where I differ from you is it's better than that first Hobbit. That's where I'm going. Better than that first Hobbit.
Christ.
And I actually, for the 2.5 hours I sat there, I watched it in the high frame rate 3D.
Barbershop actually is better than that.
I enjoyed that for what it was. I went in, I put on the 3D glasses. It was, you know, 48 frames a second. It
you
looked
got
great.
Served is better than
that. Well, I'm just saying it was better than that. And then I have one final category for other movies I liked. Comedies that actually worked. That's a rare category.
Hey.
We're the Millers. Had no business being funny.
I thought it was funny, too.
It was funny.
Yeah.
Look, and again, much like The Hobbit, it was better than the one that came before it, but Hangover 3 was better than Hangover 2.
I
enjoyed Hangover 3.
Hangover 3 was horrible.
And Bad Grandpa was funny for what it was.
Nope.
Again, it's not a great movie, but Grandpa's funny. Okay, let's get to the worst, and you can start with Hangover 3.
Oh, boy. There was a movie that came out beginning of the year, weird, worth checking out if you see it on Netflix.
Okay.
Stoker.
I'll see if that's on.
A very weird movie.
Stoker. Okay, I've heard of it, but I've never seen
it. Not really great, but interesting, because it does not act like you think it's going to act. Oh, the worst of the year. What do we do?
Stoker you need to rent, apparently. Okay. But you can get that on. Oh, it's on HBO, Stoker, right now, is what they're saying. So that's good. What is the worst, Corey? Because you've seen all of these pieces of shit. I've only got a couple. Do you want to talk about Blue Jasmine? It's the worst movie of the year. Because here's the thing about Blue Jasmine. Woody Allen's...
It's not the worst.
97th movie. Here's the thing. Okay.
When you say worst movie...
Yeah, I know. It is.
Blue Jasmine has good performances
in
it.
Right.
But it just failed me in a lot of ways.
Here's what I'll say. Cate Blanchett would deserve the Best Actress of the Year for this movie. It's a shit movie, but she's great in it. The problem is it's no fun and you don't care. It's woe is me. Here's a rich person who lost their money. Boo fucking who. And no one is going to care. And no one...
Well,
you can't sympathize with this character at all.
That's a flaw of a movie.
It's a pity party, and you just go, we don't care. And I, you know,
the
are you supposed to
Blue
take
Jasmine,
joy in her falling into, you know?
The problem with Blue Jasmine is it's really well made and acted to a point.
Right.
And then you realize that there's nothing to the story.
Yeah.
Which is probably your problem with American Hustle. But American Hustle's fun, at least. Even if you don't think it's that good, you have fun.
You could say Blue Jasmine is sort of like Wolf of Wall Street almost, in like you see there's flashbacks to the former life, and it's amazing, and then what she's going through now. And it's funny, I put on Facebook right after I saw it, I said, you know, for a Woody Allen movie with Andrew Dice Clay and Louis C.K., I said, I knew this was going to be a riot, you know.
Yeah.
Which is, because there's not one laugh in this movie, by the way. Zero. You will not laugh when you watch
it. Well, they're not funny.
I guarantee no laughs for this. And it's not because it's failed humor. It's because they didn't try to make it funny.
Well, no.
Yeah, there's no...
Louis C.K. and Dice are playing...
And they're both good.
They're playing straight characters.
Yeah, and they're both good.
They're playing completely straight characters.
But you know, and then I saw somebody... Listen, I tell you. I saw somebody and they went like, oh, so I got to see Blue Jasmine, huh? And I go, no, that was sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway...
Mm. It's okay.
People didn't follow my...
There was a girl, it wasn't on my thread, but somebody tagged me in it.
Yeah.
That was like, I'm gonna go see that Hercules movie. I'm like, I can't help you. You're
all
such
right.
stupid.
Give us some bad ones. Come on, quickly. We must be hitting the 3-hour mark.
Oh my God. Right, the two like funny lines in the movie in Blue Jasmine, the ones where he tried to make jokes, he blew the timing on.
Did he? Okay.
Like in the beginning when the old lady says, "What a bitch."
Yeah.
That timing was off. And when, you know what Blue Jasmine is? Yeah. Over-labored. They overworked it.
You know, I'm glad I saw it because I wanted to see what everyone was talking about. But some people said it was great. Like somebody, one of my friends said, it's really good. You said it sucked. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. I did not care for
Blue Cate Blanchett's a great actress, and she's doing good stuff.
I didn't like Midnight in Paris. I liked this more than Midnight in Paris.
Well, Woody.
And everyone thought Midnight in Paris was the greatest fucking
thing. I liked
thing.
Your earlier funny ones, Woody. I'm like the space I'm aliens from...
Any more bad ones you want to talk about?
Oh, well, here's my quick... I'll go through this list real quick. And you know, if you look on MetroTimes.com, you can find my worst of the year. And I'm not even just going to... I'm just going to throw titles out.
Yeah, go ahead. I
Safe Haven. A Nicholas Sparks film.
Yeah, okay. Like The Notebook. Yeah.
Zac Efron.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
This guy needs to stop making movies. They're all set on like the beach in North Carolina in some small town.
Right.
And some wounded soul comes to the South and finds love and eats crawfish and makes driftwood art. Go fuck yourself.
Well, he's in Seth Rogen's new movie, but go ahead.
Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. Jeremy Renner. In amazing performance in American Hustle.
Yes.
Horrible performance in the worst. Who thought that was an idea? You know what I mean? Like they go, this fairy tale bullshit's got to stop. Now they're making, there's a Frankenstein movie that's
coming
out.
Yeah, I know they got to stop.
Looks
I'm
like
you.
A Megaton bomb.
I'm with you.
You know why they make these? Because no one owns Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Nobody owns Hansel and Gretel.
And they just say,
we can make that for free.
Each generation gets its own bad Hansel and Gretel. Each generation gets its own bad Frankenstein, its own bad Dracula. The witches were just screeching
the whole time.
Yeah.
It's just loud screeching witches, and then they get blown up.
Every 20 years, they're going to re-bring up one of these genres. So.
Another horrible fairy tale movie, Jack the Giant Slayer.
Yeah.
Which was a big spectacle. Apparently made for people who don't speak English.
Who made that?
Some jackass.
It wasn't the guy who made... Oh, fuck. I'm blanking on names. Go ahead. Who cares?
Terrible. Not Jack. I thought it was
Zack Snyder or somebody. No?
No.
Because Zack Snyder made...
All right. Well, now we got to look.
Jack the Giant. I know.
Oh.
All right. By the way.
8-hour show. Here.
Look, I know people like this and said this was the best horror movie of the year.
Bryan Singer.
And I'm done. Okay, Bryan Singer made That's What I Mean. I told you he was a big director.
It's kind of overrated.
Okay, here, if this was the best horror movie made in 2013, I'll never see another horror movie. Fuck The Conjuring. Fucking wet. Fucking asshole. Fuck that movie. It's bullshit. Just because it's based on a real story, it's still bullshit. Those paranormal investigators are bullshit. The whole fucking thing is bullshit. Little girls are not scary. There's no little girl that anyone's afraid of in the fucking world. But in every movie, you put a little girl in it, and people run for the fucking hills, and no one's afraid.
The Conjuring was pretty good for a haunted house movie,
but they treated it like those are the real people, Ed and Lorraine,
are con artists, and they treated them like they were actual...
The audience goes, well, this really happened. And it's
Joel,
like,
ugh. Joel, you and I are not superstitious.
I know.
Superstitious people go to paranormal activity, and they wait to get scared, because there's a demon. If I don't believe in God, demons don't scare me.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? Atheists are probably not the best audience for demon movies.
Yeah, anything else shitty, I mean, aside.
The Purge, speaking of bad horror movies.
Yeah, I heard that was awful.
Ethan Hawke, sadly, I completely forgot Before Midnight, which was good but frustrating.
Okay, yeah, see, that's another one that people are talking about, like, in the Oscar, I think it's nominated for screenplay or something. I never saw those other Before, whatever.
You'd be annoyed by them.
You know.
If you want to hear,
I wanted to see Julie Delpy in Before She Got Ugly, but apparently that's too late.
Heyo,
comedy.
Watch the first one; she's gorgeous.
I know she was one of the hottest chicks in the 90s. But
or watch Killing Zoe.
That's what I mean. She's naked in that.
All right, we're like Mr. Skin and Siskel and Ebert here. The Purge, another bad horror movie, made a lot of money because it was nothing.
Yeah.
No idea.
People went to that because they liked the premise, and then it wasn't good.
Well, you know what? It had a good idea.
Yeah.
And then they made it into the same stupid home invasion horror movie that they make where we had people wearing creepy masks. And Ethan Hawke is supposed to be a security expert, and he spends like the whole movie he doesn't have a backup generator or some shit. Spends the whole movie walking around in dark hallways bumping into stuff.
Yeah.
So stupid. Yeah. Oh my God, this is a movie. This is an art house. This is when art house movies go wrong.
Yeah.
A movie called Adore with Naomi Watts and Robin Wright.
Okay.
They're best friends who have teenage sons, and they decide to start fucking each other's sons.
Okay.
They live on a beach.
I might watch that, but no.
You might watch... just really, it just really,
really,
just really
it.
Kind of gross and right. Like.
That's the end of the show. I need to cue that up.
Thank
but,
you. Thank you. That and Blue and the Worm's Call.
Beat My Meat. Talking yeah. About that.
Planes.
Oh yeah,
that's I had to take my 4-year-old nephew to this, and
yeah, and you know what? Monsters, the Monsters University didn't get nominated for Best Picture.
No.
They say they might be on the decline. The Pixar
Monsters University. You know why? Because Disney's interfering.
Well, no. Pixar runs Disney. John Lasseter runs Disney Animation.
Planes wasn't a Pixar release,
but it doesn't matter. John Lasseter is the head of the studio.
Yeah,
he oversees. Even though he didn't direct those other, you know, he didn't direct the Incredibles and shit, he oversaw that too with Pixar. Now he's in that same role with Disney, and the movies aren't as good.
Wreck-It Ralph was good, but it wasn't
okay.
Like
right.
Wall-E.
That's what I mean. He's,
Wall-E
he's,
was great.
He's right, yeah. He's down the decline.
But you know, people...
And Despicable Me 2 is the one that everyone says is good, and that was the other, you know...
You know, there is a difference in kids' movies. They're not all the same.
Yeah.
Planes is really horribly boring.
Yeah.
Frozen, you could watch and go, that's entertaining.
Well, I watched Tangled. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Frozen's kind of like Tangled.
Okay.
After Earth.
Oh, Jesus.
A little film.
Let's move on.
By Will Smith. Let's
move on.
And a gentleman called M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong.
No need to. He's making a television show, by the way, that's coming out soon. So
why is it like.
Get ready to not watch that.
You know what it is? I think when you get up to like the 33rd level of Scientology or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, when you get up to the high levels.
Yeah.
They tell you, you must make. A really incomprehensible, shitty science fiction movie. Like that, like, right? It's like Battlefield Earth.
Who's the Scientologist in that? Shyamalan?
Will Smith.
Or? Oh, Will Smith is a Scientologist? I didn't even know. Who cares?
And by the way, Will Smith, I speak to you now.
Yeah.
It's a man who once enjoyed your work.
Really?
I liked Men in Black.
It's a guy who never enjoyed your work.
No, you know what I'm saying? I'm
yeah, well, okay. Yeah.
I liked him in Men in Black.
I only saw the third Men in Black. And I guess that's not the one to see.
The first one's good.
Okay, I never didn't see it.
I once enjoyed Will Smith's antics.
Yeah.
I watched a little Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when I was but a lad.
Yeah.
Not that that's a good show,
no,
but
you're a little
everybody
younger
watched
than
it.
Me, and I think that's why I like that.
Or his stupid rap videos.
Yeah.
I beg you to stop. I beg you, I plead with you, Will Smith, put your children into a private school. Get them an education.
Well, you know.
Get them a degree.
You know, I want.
Maybe they'll become a physical therapist or a nurse.
Here's a movie.
Or something helpful.
Here's a movie this is the greatest movie ever. I'm going to make this. If I can get the funding, maybe I'll do an Indiegogo or something. I'm going to build a time machine. I'm going to go to the future. And there will be a book written about Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith that's going to be the greatest book ever because he's going to be blowing every fucking guy, every house boy and pool boy, and he's going to be taking it up the ass every minute, and she's going to be banging every white guy, and their kids are going to be running around doing cocaine, and it's going to be a great book.
How their beards for each other?
And I just don't know what year we're going to get that in, but whatever it is, that's where I want to be.
Thank you.
So anyway. Okay.
That's the future? Is it in...
That's my movie plot.
Is that in the same timeline as Her?
Yes, it would be around Her. I'll talk to
Does
the computer.
Does Samantha read that aloud to Theo?
Or it could be Elysium. You would be in a world without oxygen or something.
Stop putting your children in
films. They got to stop.
Both those talentless
Enough
little bastards.
Enough of that.
Grown Ups 2, Adam Sandler. There you go.
Hey-o.
Huh?
Hey-o.
How about that piece of shit?
Yeah.
Poor guy. My God.
Well, I just have my final worst movie of the year.
Oh, I got two more.
Go ahead, yeah.
Bullet to the Head.
Yeah.
Starring Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
Worst piece of garbage.
That was like a January release.
I want to see if we can pull up a clip from that with that has the music in it.
Yeah, I
to
would
to put
know.
On the page. I'm not saying now.
Okay, yeah.
You got to hear how bad this music is.
But it's like the original score, you mean, is bad? It's
imagine if Joe Satriani was fucking Stevie Ray Vaughan. And it's like this horrible blues guitar. It is horrible.
Yeah.
And it's behind everything. And it's also Stallone going. Grown Ups did not, or Grudge Match did not make the list just because it came out late in the year. But good God, it almost should have.
Yeah,
it's horrible.
I began. None of these.
And what's your number one worst? I have one that's horrible.
Well, we did a whole show on this, so we don't even have to talk about it much. Room 237 is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my entire life. And I guess that offended me. We did a whole show called Room 227 where Tenney, because, you know, this is about, like, hidden messages in the work of Stanley Kubrick and stuff. And so Tenney kind of came in to debunk it, and you had seen it and hated it, and I saw it, of course, and hated it. But the thing that gets to me is, like, this is a movie that is trying to be smart. And what it's saying is, like, you know, you saw The Shining, but you don't understand it. Mm-hmm. You need to see this movie, and we'll tell you what's really going mm-hmm. on. And then you see the movie, and the movie's a bunch of bullshit. And what they're trying to do is create a little club where though the filmmakers and the fans of that movie know the secrets of the universe mm-hmm. that you don't know. And it's all revealed, mm-hmm. and it's all there. And to see it, you have to see our movie. Then you see the movie, mm-hmm. and none of it's in there.
Yeah.
And it's all the dumbest shit you've ever seen. Yeah. It's all, like, numerology, and it's just... It's a giant waste of time. Don't see Room 2. Because it was funny, Sean, your friend Sean Stone, mm-hmm. I think put on Facebook, like, hey, should I see this Room 237? It's on Netflix now. It looks good. And I put on there, like, a link to our show that mm-hmm. we had done, like, a month before. And, like, yeah, just listen to this. Mm-hmm. I think that'll tell you all you need to know. To me, that was the worst movie of the year. I didn't, unlike you, I'm not forced to watch bad mm-hmm. movies. So the few I see, I usually go into expecting them to actually be good. And I think I fell for the hype on Room 237.
Bad comedies, dude. I hated The Hangover 3.
Yeah, okay.
I really did.
All right.
But I didn't have it on the list because it's bad, but it didn't have that special something.
Yeah, I mean,
Grown Ups 2 was barely a movie. I don't know how they were like, we'll have a lot of cameos and we'll walk around and a deer will pee on my head.
Don't you think the fun in that is just like they make this movie and they're having a good time and that's the point of it?
That's what it is. Well, I said, when I reviewed it on TV, I said, looks like they had fun making it. I had no fun watching it.
It's like, yeah. It's like, do you want to work today? Nah, just turn the fucking cameras on and we'll goof around.
Yeah, I'm going to fight on Chris Rock then. It's really what it is. So, but the worst movie of the year, the movie that hurt me the most, the most painful to sit through.
Oh, boy.
The film that no one saw, God bless them.
Yeah.
Because it was called Only God Forgives.
Only God Forgives.
Directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, the genius that brought you Drive.
Right, yeah. I know
a movie that a lot of people hated.
It's funny because I know the title of this, and I know that, like, I like Drive, and I think I would want to have seen his follow-up, but apparently, no.
If you want to watch a movie that it takes place entirely in... You thought there was slow-mo in Spring Breakers? This is like... You know what I'm saying? If this was still on film, they shot 8 million feet of film.
Yeah.
It is like all long, drawn-out, slow-motion takes of nothing happening. It looks nice.
Yeah.
Like, it is actually composed well.
Right.
The colors are beautiful, but nothing happens. It's about nothing. It's Ryan Gosling has about 9 words of dialogue. I think Robert Redford said more in all his vlogs. He looks blankly at the camera.
Well, that's kind of Drive is like no dialogue.
This makes Drive look like an Albert Brooks movie. Like, you know what I mean? Drive is suddenly, Albert Brooks is in Drive.
Yeah.
It makes it look
Drive
like.
It's Blue Jasmine.
It looks like American Hustle.
Yeah, okay.
They're just a lot of excited cocaine addled Jews talking compared to this thing. It's about Ryan Gosling's a boxing trainer in Thailand. And there's like a evil police captain.
Yeah.
Like, it's, oh my God. And there's literally guys get their hands chopped off.
Yeah.
I wanted my fucking eyes pulled
out. Well, it's too bad.
It's so horribly pretentious. Most pretentious, arty, farty piece of shit I ever saw.
There you go. There it is. Hey-o.
All right, that's an 8-hour.
We're as long as
Wolf of Wall Street.
We're longer than Wolf of Wall Street. That's the scene of that Joel Radio. That first hour of Joel Radio was great. And then
hour number two,
no good. But we do got to get out. I mean, look, we couldn't cover the movies any more in depth. I mean, what show would go this in depth, though?
Not a sane one.
Not a normal one. So I'm glad we did that. So that's good, man. I'm glad we did this, and I'm glad I went out and saw all the Oscar-nominated movies, and that made me feel good. And you know what? Most of them were good. So as much as, you know, American Hustle I hated, you know, the other 8 nominated ones were all on my list.
You know what? There was nothing on the list this year that I went, that doesn't belong there.
That doesn't deserve, yeah.
Every year there's one you go.
Well, to me it's American Hustle, but again, 8 of the 9 were good, so what can I tell you?
Yeah.
And I think if I had one takeaway, I would say Philomena is a huge surprise. If you think you're not going to like it, you like it. The Way, Way Back is probably the most fun you're going to have sitting in your house. And Dallas Buyers Club surprised me with how good
that
was. And, you know, if you want to see something weird, Computer Chess. You know, you're going to hate me. You probably won't like Rubberneck, and you're going to hate me. But, again, I think that's very interesting story-wise, and... you know, Inside Llewyn Davis is worth a shot, you know.
See Nebraska.
See Act of Killing, Corey. That's fucking crazy.
See Nebraska,
There's
people.
Nothing, yeah, Nebraska. See Nebraska.
Make the effort to go see that. Her is phenomenal.
See, see Her, yes, I agree with that. In fact, we're going to end the show.
Play us out.
We're going to play us out with something from Her. This is Karen O's version of the song they sing.
Oh, yeah,
show.
Okay.
It's called The Moon Song, and it's nominated for Best Song, and it's a really nice it's a nice little song, and I like Karen O and the AAS, and that's
good times.
That's Spike's babe, Karen O.
Oh, that's his lady?
That's his lady.
All right, then.
Anyway, we're going to get out of here.
He's the good Spike.
The good Spike.
Because the other Spike made a movie called Old Boy that was a remake of a great Korean movie, and... Oh, did he take a shit on that?
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Stroll Radio. You got to give a code word if they made it through this one.
Your code word.
Quickly. Songs
like Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
When the duck drops down, your code word is platypus.
Platypus. All right.
610-552-0746.
Good night.
Email us.
Good night.
Twitter us.
See
Facebook
ya.
Go to the Facebook page. Tell us. Platypus, if you made it all the way through this motherfucker of a show.
Good night, everybody.
There's no thing I keep.